news break from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Don Waller in New York. The leader of Spain's victorious socialists said Monday that he will bring his nation's troops home from Iraq by June 30th, fulfilling a campaign promise a day after his party's win in elections overshadowed by terrorist bombings. The surprise defeat Sunday of Prime Minister José María Aznar's conservatives marked the first time a government that backed the U.S.-led war in Iraq has been voted out of office and came amid charges that Aznar made Spain a target for terrorists by supporting the war. Sweeping baggage checks for passengers on the very open U.S. rail transit systems are impractical despite the specter of a terrorist threat, a high-level Bush administration official said Monday. Undersecretary of Homeland Security Asa Hutchinson sought to counter accusations by some congressional Democrats that the administration has not committed sufficient money to protection of the U.S. rail and transit systems. In the wake of the terror attack that killed some 200 and injured hundreds more in Spain, the Department of Homeland Security last week put out a bulletin advising local law enforcement authorities and transit agencies to be vigilant. Two cutting-edge computer projects designed to preserve the privacy of Americans were quietly killed while Congress was restricting Pentagon data-gathering research in a widely publicized effort to protect innocent citizens from futuristic anti-terrorism tools. As a result, the government is quietly pressing ahead with research into high-powered computer data mining technology without the two most advanced privacy protections developed to police those terror-fighting tools. The privacy projects were small parts of the Pentagon's terrorist information awareness research, the brainchild of retired Admiral John Poindexter, who was driven from the Reagan administration in 1986 over the Iran-Contra scandal. Attorney General John Ashcroft was released from the hospital Sunday, 5 days after surgery to remove his gallbladder. Ashcroft will stay in his Washington home for some quiet rest as he continues to recuperate, Justice Department spokesman Mark Corallo said. Deputy Attorney General James Corney will continue to run the department until Ashcroft returns. More news after this.
This week on TBTM Radio.
I'm mad as heck, and I think I might take it some more.
Well, you know, I'm vaguely uncomfortable with the Bush presidency.
Well, you're fired. You know, I asked our commander-in-chief today if he'd like to, like, me. Besides, it might be indecent.
And I don't have 500 grand to pay a fine.
Oh, we have to pay ourselves.
Yeah, hey, you know, that's a money-making scheme right there. And boy, how Ralph Crampton-like is that?
We'll make a million.
No, I got an idea. We'll make $1 million with it. Gosh. Take back the media. Ralphie and Ed.
Monday night Eastern at TakeBackTheMedia.com.
A Polish Benedictine nun is facing jail for driving a tractor into a car while drunk outside her convent in southwestern Poland, police said on Friday. The 45-year-old nun will be charged with drunk driving and causing an accident. The nun was 17 times over the country's legal alcohol limit for driving. For the Minuteman News Service, this is Don Waller in New York.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
It's back. The thing that just won't die has returned in mutated form to terrorize the good people of our country, gorging itself on gargantuan fistfuls of our First and Fourth Amendment rights. The thing was once known as TIA, Total Information Awareness, the Orwellian slash Frankensteinian creation of John Poindexter, the disgraced, convicted, and totally loopy former operative from the Reagan White House. Brought in from the cold by George W., Poindexter set up shop in a wing of the Pentagon called DARPA, Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency. At DARPA, the maniacal Poindexter put together his TIA, a supercomputerized program to gather every scrap of data there is on anybody, from our bank accounts to video rentals, our medical histories to photos of protests we've attended. All of this was to be sifted and sorted, ostensibly to detect suspicious behavior that would tag someone as a possible terrorist. Noting that this would make millions of Americans suspected terrorists and amount to a wholesale invasion of our people's privacy, the public screamed. Congress cut off TIA's funding, and Poindexter ultimately was forced back to disgraceland. But wait, TIA did not die. It morphed from DARPA to ARDA, Advanced Research and Development Activity, another secretive spook agency. While publicly pretending to kill TIA, congressional leaders had quietly funneled money to ARDA to resurrect TIA as the thing, which is now pursuing the exact same assault on our privacy as TIA was, even using some of Poindexter's old crew. ARDA says that its thing can wolf down a petabyte or more of data. How much is that? A petabyte will hold 40 pages of text on every man, woman, and child in the world. This is Jim Hightower saying, to help us finally drive a stake through the heart of this thing, call the Center for Democracy and Technology, 202-637-9800.
Well, I wonder who that could be. Can I help you?
Ah! Everybody, run for your lives!
A pack of crazed baboons. That's one thing you don't want in your house. One thing you do want in your house is a quieter floor with Blictanium plywood from Georgia Pacific. Blictanium holds onto nails better. That means your subflooring won't rub against them and will be less likely to squeak. Blictanium plywood. Build it better.
When you hear how big businesses get all the best technology for the best price, does it make you crazy? To calm down, here's a thought from the voice of reason. Get a Xerox M15i. It's not just a digital copier printer that gives you 16 quality pages a minute. It also scans and faxes in color. All that and more for a $66 a month lease. Big business or small, what could be more reasonable?
Call 1-800-ASK-XEROX for business lease details.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Happy Monday! Monday here, the, what is the day? I forgot to write it down. It's the 15th of March. 15th, and boy, time flies. Welcome back. Greetings, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in the American way, peace, freedom, and the American way from coast to coast. Tom Hartman broadcasting live. Streaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite, beaming across the countryside from radio stations from literally the West Coast to the East, and of course beaming all over the planet on radiopower.org, our community-based, listener-based, listener-supported internet-based radio station. So lots and lots of ways to get the show here. It's interesting. I spoke, Friday was a repeat show. For those of you who listened, it was the repeat of the previous week. And we're not quite yet, as, you know, we left the network a week and a half or 2 weeks ago, and we're not quite yet to the point where we have the technology to insert those little, this is a repeat show, please don't call. So I apologize to those of you who are confused. We're getting there. Everything is a work in progress. This program is also, although I think we're doing pretty good as we're moving along. But anyhow, on Friday I was on an airplane. Airplane hell. My flight from Burlington to Chicago was delayed. Then I missed my flight from Chicago to Los Angeles. That was delayed. I missed the flight from Los Angeles to Palm Springs. They ended up bumping me back to Saturday to speak. And then the same thing happened yesterday on the way home. I got bumped three times. But anyway, I'm here. And I was there, and I spoke at this conference called the Prophets Conference, which is put on by a couple of great folks, Cody and Robin, who live in Santa Fe, and occasionally apparently listen to on KTRC, our affiliate in Santa Fe. And there were a surprising number of people from Santa Fe there. It was a kind of a West Coast thing. You know, it's not that far to Palm Springs. I mean, a lot of people from California who listened to the program. And one of the more common questions that people asked was, how can we get it on other stations? And we have a page on our website. If you go to tomhartman.com and just click on the bring this show to a station near you, tell us how to do that. And the bottom line is find somebody local who wants to buy some radio advertising, who wants to sponsor this kind of programming, and of course, support the local programming. Now, back to business here, but I digress. Did you see this thing where It seems like the Bush 1 campaign is being fully recycled. Fully recycled. It's really quite extraordinary. First, we had the social wedge issue, the obligatory social wedge issue. Bush 1, George Sr., of course, it was flag burning. Well, if we let people burn the flag, it'll bring down the republic. It's the sacred symbol of American blah, blah, blah. And it got some traction. Got a lot of people upset. You know, it brought out the base. And it confused a lot of people who don't understand what the First Amendment says or what freedom of speech in America really means. Unfortunately. But it was, you know, one of those classic lowest common denominator wedge issues. And, of course, they're trying to do that again now with gay marriage. And the second recycling was the Willie Horton ad. You had that marvelous bit of neurolinguistic programming being applied. This subset of psychology. It's actually grounded in the hypnotic techniques of Milton Erickson, and work done by Virginia Satir and Gregory Bateson, and it was founded by Richard Bandler, who was one of my teachers. In fact, I'm licensed as a trainer of NLP, I was a student of Richard's in London years ago. And this whole idea that there are kind of psychological buttons you can push on people, their association, I mean, this is not new. Pavlov came up with this, right, where he rang the bell and then he fed the dogs, and he rang the bell and he fed the dogs. And who would ever think that ringing a bell would produce saliva? I mean, there's no direct pathways between the auditory processing brains of the region and Wernicke's and Broca's regions and the temporal lobes and the brainstem or parts of the brainstem, the cerebellum, that control salivation. And yet, sure enough, after a half a dozen times of ringing the bell and then feeding the dogs, whenever he rang the bell, the dogs would salivate. Pavlov figured that out back in the 1900s. Don't recall the year. And NLP and some of these other things, they figured out it's still possible to do this. And so you had these Willie Horton ads where you had a particular type of music. Boom, 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 boom. And then they show this, you know, this black guy, Willie Horton, and this revolving door, and boom, boom, boom. And before that, they ran, you know, it's the good cop, bad cop. Before that, they ran the positive ads. Here's George H.W. Bush and his family, you know, and people dancing through fields of roses, and it was all in color, and there was beautiful music. And then later they ran the Willie Horton ads with the black and white ads, with the dark, dark music. So what they've done is they set up what's called two anchors. An anchor in psychology is something that reminds you of something else involuntarily. For example, my grandmother owned an antique store in Newego, Michigan. And when I was growing up, and my parents are book collectors, my dad's got 20,000 books in his basement, and his house smells like my grandmother's antique store. You know, old books and old musty stuff. Not in a negative way, in a way that just thrills me. And I mean, we've got 6,000 books in this house. I guess it's genetic. But anyhow, I cannot to this day. Here I am, 53 years old. My grandparents sold the antique store when I must have been 8 or 9 or 10 years old. And I spent summers up there. I worked in there. Hung out in there. My grandfather's a cabinet maker in the back, and I used to watch him do that. And a Norwegian immigrant. And to this day, if I walk into a secondhand store, a Salvation Army, a large used bookstore where that smell is there, boom, I'm 10 years old again. I mean, it just floods back on me. We all have these things. We all have these things. These anchors, A-N-C-H-O-R, anchors that produce an involuntary emotional/memory response. And what the NLP psychology folks figured out is that it's possible to lay down anchors, that is, to install in people anchors, and then later fire them off for other things and cause an internal, below the level of consciousness, it really falls into the realm of hypnosis, below the level of consciousness, association between item A and item B because they both are associated with the same anchors. So what the Bush 1 campaign had done back in 92, or was it, it was when he was running against Dukakis. What was it, 89, 88? Anyhow, they black and white, Willie Horton, blah, 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 bum, 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 music. These were the anchors, and they laid them down, laid them down, laid them down. And then they showed other ads where it's, you know, beautiful music and it's in color. The values are different. See, the values are different. I don't mean values like, you know, the values of family. I mean production values. The production values, the quality, the sound, the what you see, were different. There's one set of production values associated with anything that had to do with George Bush, and another set of production values that were associated with anything that had to do with what's his name, Willie Horton. And oh my goodness, I've got a cat up on top of my equipment rack here, and if we get blown off the air, my apologies in advance. Anyhow, here we go, and then they showed pictures of Michael Dukakis. Yeah, grab that cat and toss him out of here. He sees a bird outside the window. Thank you, Rama. Rama Schneider is in here today, by the way, helping run the board and answering the phones if you want to say hi to him or if you'd like to be on the air. Number 1-866-889-8894, one of these newfangled toll-free numbers. So that was Papa Bush. And then after they thoroughly laid down the anchor of Willie Horton, you know, black guy, murderer, rapist, all the things designed to scare white middle America. Then they showed pictures of Michael Dukakis. And just by coincidence, those pictures of Michael Dukakis had music under them that was very similar to the Willie Horton music. And the pictures were in black and white. And they had the same announcer's voice. And what happens is everybody in their gut all of a sudden looks at Michael Dukakis and gets the feeling that they had from Willie Horton. This is psychological warfare at its most sophisticated. It was extraordinarily effective. A friend of mine who is an NLP trainer, who is certified as an NLP practitioner and an NLP trainer, I'm not going to out the guy, who went through many of the same trainings I did. He was a consultant on those ads. One of the ways that I know about this, but I mean, you know, if all you had to do is watch, if you knew what to look for, if you knew this stuff, if you understood this stuff. In our chat room, I don't know, is Glenn in our chat room? Coach Glenn. No, I don't see, he's not in there today. We've got one of the regulars in our chat room. If you drop by tomhartman.com and you can drop into our chat room, a bunch of good folks in there right now. Coach Glenn knows this stuff. He's been through a couple of trainings that I've done. So anyhow, here we see it being recycled. The flag-burning thing has been reincarnated. The wedge issue of flag-burning has been reincarnated as gay marriage. The Willie Horton ad has been reincarnated now as them Arabs, right? Those brown-skinned terrorists. And here, this from the Atlanta Constitution Journal, article by Julia Malone. An Arab-American group is calling on President Bush to remove a picture of an unidentified Middle Eastern-looking man, end quote, from a campaign ad that focuses on terrorism. James Zogby, you know the poll, Zogby the pollster? He's actually an Arab-American, so just like Casey Kasem. I mean, there's a lot of very noble Arab-Americans that are in the media and in the press. You don't think of them as terrorists. No, the good guys. John Zogby. I believe he's Lebanese. I could be wrong. Anyhow, he says it runs counter to everything the president said after 9/11 about not targeting, about not indicting all Arab Americans. He said this last Friday. As a brief close-up, Zogby said the brief close-up of a swarthy man's face, just as the narrator mentions the word terrorism. Right, just by coincidence, as the narrator says terrorism, you see a picture of this dark-skinned guy's face. He says, this is a form of racial profiling. The White House says, well, the guy's actually Italian, but he looks Arab. So that's supposed to be enough, right? That's the excuse. It's outrageous what's going on. Tom Hartman here 20 minutes before the hour. Stay tuned.
Humans have become a physical force changing the face of the planet. A new book tries to measure the impact. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Scientists have taken a timely approach to understand how people are changing the Earth's atmosphere and climate. Will Steffen is a co-author of a new book called Global Change in the Earth System. He says the book is meant to be sort of a time machine, comparing the Earth before humans to the impacts we're having today.
We start by looking at the Earth as it was before humans became an important force in the environment. In other words, before the Industrial Revolution, before the population explosion, and so on. Then the next part of the book actually takes humans a bit aside and say, what is it about the human enterprise that has changed? What are the things we're doing now that are different, and why are they impacting on the global environment? And then I think what's interesting is we put this new force back into the Earth. Now we have a new force here ourselves. How is the operation, the functioning of Earth changing because we are part of the Earth and we're now a geophysical force in our own right?
Steffen says to truly be accurate, computer models must include agriculture, forestry, fishing, and all our other activities in the global environmental equation.
Another thing we obviously have to do is to build better simulation tools, mathematical models of how the Earth actually operates. And there a very huge challenge, very big challenge, is to bring in the so-called human dimension, bring in humans, our economic activities, our political activities, integrated with the environment around us, so the fact there's one Earth system.
Steffen says one thing is clear, humans are having a massive impact on the global environment. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Jobs lost, 2.4 million. Federal deficit, $455 billion. War in Iraq, 9,000 human lives. Friends left at the United Nations, 3. America's future, bankrupt.
The time is now. Take our country back.
We'll take care of her. Got my best man, Dick, looking at it now.
George Bush says he is fighting terrorism. What does he do? Cut funding for first responders. He says he is for education. What does he do? Underfund his own plan. He says he supports our veterans. What does he do? Cut funding for their health care. George Bush said he'd restore honor and integrity to the White House. It's not what you say, George. It's what you do.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he a... Nureyev?
Nureyev.
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 Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Sure about that?
Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh?
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Down there.
right, welcome back. Defending America from the Conservative Weapons of Mass Deception. Tom Hartman here with you. So anyhow, we see, just to wrap this up, I, you know, it's sometimes you sensitize people to things and they don't get sucked into them. So I wanted to tell you about this. The Annenberg Election Survey, this is another, you know, national study of the 1,265 respondents who had not seen the ad. 54% said using World Trade Center images in a Bush ad was inappropriate. Zogby says the president's campaign has informed a member of the Arab American community that the young man in the ad is actually an Italian actor. He says this is actually worse. He says when you rely on a simple look to create fear or target a group, you end up targeting a very much larger group. So Italian Americans, be worried. The Bush administration is using the word terrorist as they show your pictures on television. The soldiers who we were holding in Guantanamo Bay are making it back to England. And the stories are starting to come out. And you know, I want to share a couple of these quick stories with you. But then, you know, let's look at the bigger issue here. And you know, in fact, I think it's important that we really be looking at the big issues with all of these things. You know, if Bush wants to do psychological warfare in his ads, you know, that's his option. Psychological warfare is done in advertising all the time. I mean, it's just this is the name of the game. And you know, John Kerry will no doubt use many of the same techniques. But the question, the real question in my mind, the larger issue, is should we have something as important as the future of our democracy, as critical as the future of our democracy, being decided by 30 and 60 second spots, and who has the money to run the most of them, and by 10, 15, and 20 second sound bites on television? Because TV news now, in the last 20 years, since the end of the Walter Cronkite era, since the network news divisions have been all taken over by the entertainment divisions, since the commitment to a democratic, free, and fair press, which held so long in the United States. Our quote for the day, Thomas Jefferson, a letter to James Curry, January 28, 1786. Our liberty depends on the freedom of the press, and that cannot be limited without being lost. And as Franklin Roosevelt said in July of 1936, freedom, that word implies constraint from some external force. And then he went on to point out that the new constraining force, the new force that constrained freedom, were the economic royalists that were rising up in America. If you want to have a free and fair press, we really need to go back to enforcement of the Sherman Antitrust Act. I don't have any problem with national media, but there really needs to be space for local media as well. And I salute those stations that are doing a lot of local programming, even though, you know, here I am doing national programming. I really believe that we must have both. We must have both. And so here we have this situation where our elections are being decided by 30 and 60 second ads and by 15 second sound bites on TV, instead of the Lincoln Douglas debates, instead of the Kennedy Nixon debates. And this is I believe a very strong, important role for government to play, to say, you know, it's time to bring debate back into politics. Tom Hartman, 29 minutes past the hour. Stay tuned.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. The Federal Open Market Committee meets tomorrow to determine whether to raise U.S. interest rates, which Alan Greenspan is expected to keep at a low level following a dismal report on February's unemployment rate. But despite persistent unemployment, the chairman of the Federal Reserve says efforts to prevent companies from sending jobs overseas to hire cheaper labor could result in further stagnation of the U.S. economy. Greenspan faults the U.S. education system for producing too many low-skilled workers, lending to the current 2 million unemployed people who have been unable to find a job for 6 months or more.
The Bush administration created the position of Assistant Secretary of Commerce for Manufacturing last Labor Day, but it only got around to filling the job this month. Now the nominee has backed away from the honor after his experience with outsourcing comes to light. Anthony Raimondo withdrew his nomination after it was discovered that his Nebraska-based company, which makes prefab metal building materials, laid off dozens of line workers in 2002, then announced plans for construction of a factory in China 4 months later. Raimondo, who spent last week in China checking up on that new factory, calls the criticism a misunderstanding.
A lawsuit filed against contractors building the Yucca Mountain dump claims there's more than nuclear waste to worry about at the facility. Former tunnel supervisor Gene Grigo says that silica dust kicked up during the construction of the nation's largest nuclear dump is to blame for his chronic pulmonary disease. Grigo says he hopes his suit will win class action status to represent as many as 1,500 others who may have been exposed to the toxic dust. The suit is aimed at Bechtel and four other construction firms.
Members of unions affiliated with the AFL-CIO will pay 4 more cents per month in dues from now through mid-2005 to finance election spending this year. The dues hike will raise about $25 million for the AFL-CIO's war chest, which is expected to burn through $44 million on the 2004 elections. That's up $4 million from 2000. This does not include political spending done by each individual union in the Federation, which is expected this year to be more than double that of the AFL-CIO itself.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Mexican immigrants who come to the United States hoping to find a better life also find workplace hazards that make them the most likely to die on the job. An investigation by the Associated Press finds that Mexican immigrants are 80% more likely to die on the job than native-born Americans, and about twice as likely as other immigrant groups. The AP says that's not only because Mexicans tend to take more dangerous work, but because fines for employers whose workers die at work are so low.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I ain't lived forever, but I've lived enough. And I've learned to be gentle, and I've learned to be tough. I've found only two things that last till the end. One is your heroes, the other's your friends. Your heroes will help you find good. Your friends won't forsake you for somebody else.
1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Tom Hartman here with you, 26 minutes before the hour, where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison, not some right-wing think tank or the Republican National Committee. Anyhow, we got these Guantanamo Bay prisoners who have made it back to Britain now. And they're starting to tell their stories. They're starting to share, you know, what happened there. And the people that it is scaring the most are the American soldiers who are deployed overseas. Why? Because after, you know, after World War I and the mustard gas and all that stuff, and people died absolutely horrific deaths in World War I. And after this, treaties were put into place and then strengthened after World War II. The Geneva Convention on Warfare that basically said, okay, war is a game that can be played in a particular way. There are rules for war. And there are things that you can't do. And if you take prisoners, you have to treat them in a particular way. And here we have The Guardian now has interviewed a few of these guys that got released last week. And among the other disclosures, the three men reveal, I'm reading from an article by David Rose in The Observer, which is the Sunday paper published by The Guardian. How early in their ordeal they survived a massacre perpetrated by Afghanistan's Northern Alliance troops. These are the guys who are our friends now. They're the big opium growers up in the north who are supplying all that heroin for America. Who herded hundreds of thousands of prisoners, or hundreds of prisoners, into lorry containers, that's trucks, and locked them in so that the people started to suffocate. Iqbal described how only 20 or 30 prisoners in each container, 20 of 300 prisoners in each container lived, and only then because someone made holes in the side with a machine gun, an action which killed yet more prisoners. They went on to talk about the existence of a super secret maximum security facility outside the main part of Guantanamo's Camp Delta, known as Camp Echo, where prisoners were held in tiny cells in solitary confinement 24 hours a day, with a military officer, a police officer, permanently stationed outside each cell door. The handful of inmates in Camp Echo include two of the four remaining British detainees and the Australian, David Hicks. That they endured 3 months of solitary confinement. Most Americans have never been in jail. Most Americans have never been locked up. Solitary confinement, the most of us can remember is being sent to our room when we were 10 years old. But solitary confinement, particularly when it lasts more than a few days, and especially when you have no idea how long it's going to last. If you're in prison and you know you got 12 months to get out, you can start counting the days, right? But if you don't know how long it's going to last, it might last the rest of your life. This is why we're seeing all these suicides and suicide watches among these guys. This is stuff that takes people's brains apart. They endured 3 months of solitary confinement in Camp Delta's isolation block last summer after they were wrongly identified by the Americans as having been pictured in a videotape of a meeting in Afghanistan between Osama bin Laden and the leader of the 11 September hijackers, Mohammed Atta. Ignoring their protests that they were in Britain at the time, the Americans interrogated them so relentlessly that eventually all three falsely confessed. They were finally saved, at least on this occasion, by MI5, the British Intelligence Service, which came up with documentary proof that they had not left the UK at that time. The Court of Appeal, this is the British Court of Appeal, criticized the absence of any legal due process at Guantanamo as a, quote, legal black hole. The three men said that as far as they could see, there were few, if any, genuine terrorists at Guantanamo Bay, perhaps, at worst, a few mullahs who had been loyal to Tehran. And this is why this is terrifying our soldiers. I played this last Thursday. It's worth repeating for those of you who didn't hear it. It's not that long for those of you who did hear it. It's still worth listening to one more time. This is Michael McPherson. He's a member of the United States military, and he just lays it out in a way which is absolutely straightforward, that just says, this is the way it is, this is what we need to be concerned about, this is what you should be thinking about, because this is what our soldiers are thinking about.
When I invaded Iraq as part of the 24th Mechanized Infantry Division, I understood that the enemy was out to kill me, and my job was also to kill the enemy. This is what combatants do on the battlefield. This is what we are trained to do. I also understood that if I were captured, I would be at the mercy of my enemy. Being a prisoner of war is an experience to be avoided, but if captured, I hope to be treated in accordance with the Geneva Convention. I took comfort in my belief that the U.S. was dedicated to following the convention. At least that is what I was taught.
That's what we've been teaching. I mean, you know, the rules of war, the rules of engagement, all the way back to, well, during the Revolutionary War, the Brits complained that we didn't quite fight fair. But basically, ever since then, well, you could argue there have been a few exceptions, but certainly since World War I, we have fought by the rules of war. But, says Mr. McPherson,
today's soldiers cannot take comfort in our treatment of POWs. In fact, they must wonder, if captured, if they will be treated as enemy combatants.
In other words, if they will be stuck in a prison with no access to an attorney, no access to the Red Cross, no idea when they're going to get out, locked up, arbitrary arrest, how can the government of the United States do this? How can our nation, we, the nation that should be the moral leaders of the world, how can we do this? I mean, this is tragic. This is truly tragic. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number. And Jerry in Illinois is on the line. Hey, Jerry, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. Jerry, I can't hear you. Maybe your cell phone croaked.
Hello, can you hear me, Tom?
There you go.
Real quick, I am on a cell phone. You talked about the flag burning, getting traction, and then the Willie Hartnett.
Yeah.
Over the weekend, we had 6 servicemen killed in Iraq. Why is that getting traction out there?
Well, it's interesting. In George Bush's ads, he will show you the flag-draped body of somebody from 9/11, but he won't show you the flag-draped bodies of those 6 men who died in Iraq this weekend, because that would be exploiting the dead. Make sense to you, Jerry? I guess we've lost Jerry on his cell phone. We'll move along. Jerry, thanks for the call. I do appreciate it. Philip in Florida's on the line. Hey, Philip, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi. Glad you're still on the air. And I think everyone who listens to you also feels, how can I put it, I'll just say happy that you haven't been cut off the air.
No, we're here. We're going to stay here.
Good. Yeah. I want to make an analogy. A kid can walk home from school down the alley and see the junkyard dog, you know, the Doberman Pinscher, whatever, sitting under his... You know, sitting in the junkyard, you know, in his doghouse, knowing how ferocious that dog is, he can walk by and do nothing. Or the kid can pick up a tree limb and smash the fence, and get that dog running at him and barking and going nuts, right?
Mm. You mean a junkyard dog that's restrained by a fence?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. I think, you know, I'm going to give you a different perspective. I think some members in the gay community basically decided, you know, we know that we're probably not going to be successful, but what the hell, let's get a good stick and bang on the fence. And George Bush came alive and started barking with all his pals.
Yeah.
And you know, if Bush wins this election, it'll be because of these people who are very self-indulgent and very focused on themselves and not concerned about bringing in or giving a guy who has basically brought light fascism to the United States, giving him another 4 years. Because they gave him an issue that wasn't an issue.
Well, Philip, I would say in 1954, when Dwight Eisenhower was running for re-election, he worked very, very hard to make peace the main issue of his election. I mean, you know,
I'll go to Korea.
Yeah. This was a big. This was, in fact, I might even have a. Let's see if I've got it here. It was just Eisenhower. Here, hang on just a second. No, I don't. Anyway, Eisenhower had these great commercials. You know, vote for Eisenhower, vote for peace. But what the real undercurrent was Brown versus Board of Education, which was in 1954, which was a civil rights case where something similar had happened, and folks were saying the same thing. They were saying, well, why don't those black people just be quiet and just stay in the background, because they're going to stir up the racist vote and they're going to mess with electoral politics. I'm sorry, I respectfully disagree. I think that civil rights is civil rights, and when it gets brought up is when it gets brought up.
There is nothing stopping, you know, gay couples from living together and doing a lot of things. The Board of Education issue was preventing children from getting an education. This is only preventing them from, you know, having a ceremony and that kind of thing. They're free to live together. They're free to do whatever they want together.
No, they're not.
They could have waited till the election was over before taking that stick and hitting the chain link fence.
Well, you know, strategically, you make a valid point. But the reality is, number one, they're not free to do. There are over 1,000 benefits conferred by marriage. And gays don't have access to those. And those are basic civil rights. And secondly, I don't think that most of these people who I don't think that the folks that whose case led to the Supreme Court of Massachusetts saying that gay marriage was okay planned this thing like this. I mean, these cases take years to make their way through courts.
Yeah, but, you know, I don't know. And I think there's I can't remember, but he's from Massachusetts, and he's gay, and he's a congressman.
Barney Frank.
Yeah, he's not real pleased about this action either.
Yeah, I know. He's concerned that it's going to backfire. You know, I think that this is going to play out in one of two ways, Jerry, and it's going to be It's going to be really interesting to see which way it plays out. If the Democrats, or the gays for that matter, or just America, the news, succeeds in framing this as a civil rights issue, then Bush is going to lose on this thing. If, on the other hand, it gets framed as aberrant sexual behavior versus normal sexual behavior, which is the way that Jerry Falwell's running around trying to say, you know, that this is really what the issue is, then it could do some harm to the Democrats. But I don't think, frankly, it's going to do a lot of harm. I think the vast majority of Americans are getting it, that this really has to do with the fact that somewhere between 3% and 10% of our population are gay, and the vast majority of them are not gay by choice. They were born that way. And,
well, I agree.
And they should have rights.
But the point, I still say that they gave him an issue he didn't have.
He would have found something else. I guarantee you, Philip, he would have found something else. It would have been, we'd be screaming about partial birth abortions or stem cells right now if it wasn't for that. He would have found a wedge issue. If nothing else, they would have had a half a dozen people out burning flags in front of the White House to start that one. These guys know wedge politics, and you know, they were handed this on a silver platter. Yeah, sure, they're going to use it. Frankly, I think that this could backfire on them. I really think it could, and I think that Americans are starting to see through this stuff. They're starting to realize that there are really much more important issues. There are issues of war and peace. There are issues of America's standing in the world. There are issues of democracy and economics. I don't know if you saw the article that I wrote for CommonDreams.org this weekend. The reality is that there is no such thing as a free market, and the middle class is an artifact. It's an artificial thing that is created by virtue of government intervention and conservative economic policies since Reagan first started trickle-down economics in 1980, have been wiping out the American middle class. Those are the issues, I think, that are really, really going to push the election. And no matter how hard Faux News and Bill O'Reilly and the culture warriors try to, you know, raise gay marriage and also the passion of the crisis. Of course, Bill O'Reilly invested in Mel Gibson's movies, so he's been hyping it continuously now for over a year. And no matter how much they try to do that, I think ultimately Americans are going to wake up and see through this. In fact, after speaking at this conference this weekend in Palm Springs, I was just amazed by the response of the audience. I mean, there was, I don't know, 500, 600, 700 people there, and I talked about politics and politics as a force, as a spiritual force, as a practical force, and I'm becoming increasingly convinced that George Bush is toast. That Americans really and truly are waking up. So,
okay, can I tell you one other story?
Sure. It'll have to be quick. We got about a minute and a half.
My brother's an executive for a we'll just say a Japanese electronics company, and he calls on Walmart. And he agrees that Walmart is bad for the country, and he gave me an illustration. I don't know if you remember Vlasic Pickles?
Sure.
They went out of business.
Oh, I know. That story was actually in the Wall Street Journal 4 or 5 months
Walmart.
Ago. Yeah, because Walmart every year says you got to drop your price by a penny. Yeah, or a percentage, yeah.
That's right. And they have such a high share of the market, so they did what Walmart told them to, and they were trading dollars. They weren't making any money.
Yeah.
And ultimately, they went bankrupt.
Yeah. Yeah, and whenever we say that, I think it's really important, Philip, that we recognize that the problem isn't Walmart. The problem is that our government
has been hijacked by a right-wing bunch of ideologues or ideologues who believe that this, quote, free market, which basically means let corporations rule, is a good thing for democracy, and it's not. It's destroying America. The rules of the game of business are defined by business, by government, and we need to set those rules so that things like Walmart can't destroy the American middle class any further. Thanks for the call, Philip. I appreciate it. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned.
Delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America. Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
Stories of courage need to be shared. That's why we want to tell you about Senators Bob Graham and Bill Nelson. They have stood strong to protect our coastlines from exploration and drilling by powerful oil and gas companies. But the fight's not over. Congress is now pushing an energy bill that still threatens our coastlines with oil and gas activities, hands billions of dollars in tax breaks over to the oil, gas, coal, and nuclear companies, and could exempt polluters from clean air and safe drinking water laws. What's more, this so-called energy bill doesn't cut our dangerous dependence on foreign oil, fix what's wrong with our aging energy grid, adequately promote renewable wind and solar power, protect consumers, or increase the efficiency or security of our energy system. There is a better way. Call Senators Graham and Nelson at 202-225-3121. Thank them for their courage and ask them to reject this dangerous energy bill. Paid for by the Florida Sierra Club.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. boss. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection.
The best of the rest of the news, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the True People's Radio. This is Tom Hartman with you 4 minutes before the hour. Lily, a truck driver in Del Rio, Texas, is on the line. Hey, Lily, you must be listening on Sirius Satellite.
Hi, how are you?
Great, how are you today?
I'm doing fine. I was just listening to my Sirius Satellite radio, and I ran across your show, and I loved what I was hearing.
Well, thank you.
I guess I'm what they call a liberal conservative. Is there such an animal? I don't know.
Well, I think I'm one, too. I mean,
one or the other nowadays.
Yeah, these labels are increasingly meaningless. I mean, you know, they've tried to paint liberals as anti-American, you know, weirdos or something. But the reality is that America has been a liberal democracy right from the very beginning. George Washington called himself a liberal.
Well, that's what I am mostly. I believe in fairness.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a Christian who hardly ever goes to church.
Yeah.
But, you know, I believe in God. I wanted to talk a little bit about gay marriage.
Sure.
You know, I have done so much thinking about that. Initially, my position was that's terrible. Why do they want to do that? But then I went online, and I decided to open myself up, and I spoke to a lot of people who were gay. I remembered how there are people in my family who are gay. I remembered how I still loved them, still thought of them as people. I remembered what Christianity really is all about. It's about love.
Yep.
And then I thought to myself, how could I deny someone that kind of a relationship with someone else that they really care about? What business is it of mine what they do with each other personally?
Amen.
It's certainly none of their business what I do with my husband personally.
Yep.
So why should I care about that? You know, I and it was really a hard place for me to get to. But in the spirit of fairness, I had to open my mind, truly open it.
Yeah.
You know, I still have problems with some of the wacky people I see in the gay pride parade. But then again, sure. I have problems with the Ku Klux Klan, too.
Well, you know, and I have problems with the Republican Party. I mean, in every the Democratic Party, for that matter. I mean, every group is going to have its people who are on the edge, including normal straight people, whatever you call them. I mean, you know,
exactly.
It's wearing thong bikinis that, there's just... Yeah, just because groups have people who are out there invisible doesn't mean that the whole group is bad or wrong or
exactly.
something.
Exactly. And I really, you know, if I were gay, I would want the same rights, you know, tax-wise, Social Security-wise, healthcare-wise, inheritance-wise, that I have as a married person. I would want those same rights
yeah.
as well.
It's just
you know,
fair.
Let it be God. When we all die and go to wherever, if that's where we go, let him be the judge.
There you go.
Christians, I don't think that we can call ourselves Christian and be so hateful.
Yeah, I agree. Lily, I'm sorry we're out of time, but you've made your point very eloquently. I appreciate the call. Thanks for calling so much.
Bye-bye.
This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program. 2 minutes before the hour. Protecting America from the conservative weapons of mass distraction.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
In my country, a group of religious extremists are reshaping the government to promote their own agenda and morality.
The government can keep a list of everyone I call, and they do not need a judge's permission.
Our citizens are seized and held in prison without being charged of a crime, without the right to a trial, and without a lawyer. Why should you care about what is happening to my country? Because my country is the United States of America.
If elected, I'll lie about weapons of mass destruction as a pretext to invade another country.
I'll call myself an environmentalist and gut clean air standards.
Our allies will go from respecting us to hating us, and I don't care.
I'll leave no child behind, unless they can't afford it.
I promise to keep you in a state of fear and anxiety, so you never question what we're doing.
And if you do, we'll call you unpatriotic.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
News break from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Don Waller in New York. The leader of Spain's victorious socialists said Monday that he will bring his nation's troops home from Iraq by June 30th, fulfilling a campaign promise a day after his party's win in elections overshadowed by terrorist bombings. The surprise defeat Sunday of Prime Minister José María Aznar's conservatives marked the first time a government that backed the U.S.-led war in Iraq has been voted out of office and came amid charges that Aznar made Spain a target for terrorists by supporting the war. Sweeping baggage checks for passengers on the very open U.S. rail transit systems are impractical despite the specter of a terrorist threat, a high-level Bush administration official said Monday. Undersecretary of Homeland Security Asa Hutchinson sought to counter accusations by some congressional Democrats that the administration has not committed sufficient money to protection of the U.S. rail and transit systems. In the wake of the terror attack that killed some 200 and injured hundreds more in Spain, the Department of Homeland Security last week put out a bulletin advising local law enforcement authorities and transit agencies to be vigilant. Two cutting-edge computer projects designed to preserve the privacy of Americans were quietly killed while Congress was restricting Pentagon data-gathering research in a widely publicized effort to protect innocent citizens from futuristic anti-terrorism tools. As a result, the government is quietly pressing ahead with research into high-powered computer data mining technology without the two most advanced privacy protections developed to police those terror-fighting tools. The privacy projects were small parts of the Pentagon's terrorist information awareness research, the brainchild of retired Admiral John Poindexter, who was driven from the Reagan administration in 1986 over the Iran-Contra scandal. Attorney General John Ashcroft was released from the hospital Sunday, 5 days after surgery to remove his gallbladder. Ashcroft will stay in his Washington home for some quiet rest as he continues to recuperate, Justice Department spokesman Mark Corallo said. Deputy Attorney General James Corney will continue to run the department until Ashcroft returns. More news after this.
This week on TBTM Radio.
I'm mad as heck and I think I might take it some more.
Well, you know, I'm vaguely uncomfortable with the Bush presidency.
Oh, you're fired. You know, I asked our commander-in-chief today if he'd like to, like, me. Besides, it might be indecent.
And I don't have 500 grand to pay a fine.
Oh, we have to pay ourselves.
Yeah, hey, you know, that's a money-making scheme right there. Boy, how Ralph Crampton-like is that?
We'll make a million.
Norton, I got an idea. We'll make $1 million with it. Take back the media. Ralphie and Ed.
Monday 9 Eastern at TakeBackTheMedia.com.
A Polish Benedictine nun is facing jail for driving a tractor into a car while drunk outside her convent in southwestern Poland, police said on Friday. The 45-year-old nun will be charged with drunk driving and causing an accident. The nun was 17 times over the country's legal alcohol limit for driving. For the Minuteman News Service, this is Don Waller in New York.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
The long grocery strike in Southern California has ended, but the energy and awareness that it unleashed will roll across our land for many years to come. This was a strike forced by Safeway CEO Stephen Bird, who targeted his workers' middle-class pay scale and benefits for elimination, seeking to Walmartize the entire industry's workforce. He was joined by Albertsons and Kroger's, which locked out their Southern California workers the very day after Safeway workers were forced to strike. Some 70,000 people suddenly were jobless thanks to this collusive power play. With no paychecks, no unemployment comp, no health coverage, and union strike benefits of only $125 a week, the economic and emotional stress on the workers was enormous.
Yet they hung in through the longest grocery strike in U.S. history, twice as long as the chain CEOs had assumed they could last. The CEOs, of course, kept drawing their multimillion-dollar salaries and Rolls-Royce health coverage, so they endured no personal sacrifice. At the end, the chains had lost $1.5 billion in revenues and much more in goodwill. But the CEOs had the still deep pockets of their national companies going for them and a brutish driving determination to crush the industry's pay scale so they and other top stockholders could take more for themselves. The end came last month when union members accepted a new company offer. The union took some big hits, but current workers did not take a pay cut or have to slash their health care coverage, which was one of the chain's two top goals. By taking a stand, these workers staved off a knockout blow to middle-class grocery jobs. This is Jim Hightower saying, "This is a class war that has only begun. As a result of this grocery fight, a growing majority of working folks all across the country now know that all of us are targeted and that the assault is not about some jobs here and some benefits there, but about whether America will be a middle-class country."
LendingTree.com presents How to Get Out from Under Debt. First, take an average guy.
Hello.
Then add some credit card debt, a car payment, and a student loan.
Ow.
To get out from under all this debt, get a debt consolidation loan from LendingTree.com, where banks compete and you choose the loan that's right for you. Call 1-800-555-TREE. That's 1-800-555-TREE. When banks compete, you win at LendingTree.com.
Equal housing opportunity. Some restrictions may apply. See website for details.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back, guaranteed.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to Talk Radio for the rest of us. The Tom Hartman radio program here, 7 minutes past the hour. Moving right along, first day of the week. Hey, yes, Tehran. The Iranians think they've got it figured out. You got to consider the source, of course. I mean, this may be complete nonsense, but it is being reported all over the world. I mean, this is like big news in the Middle East right now. And I'll read the original. So I mean, it's being picked up by all of the Arab news services, news services in countries all over the world, the BBC, the Australian broadcast. I haven't seen it on American media, but frankly, I was traveling all weekend and I really didn't catch any American media. And this morning, you know, doing show prep and whatnot, I don't see the morning shows and things. So I don't know if this is being picked up in the United States. You tell me. But here, this is from the Mehr News Agency, which is it's like the CBS of Iran. Not Iraq, Iran. Tehran. Over the past few days, there have been reports that U.S. forces have unloaded a huge cargo of parts for constructing long-range missiles and weapons of mass destruction in the southern ports of Iraq. A reliable source from the Iraqi Governing Council, speaking on condition of anonymity, told the Mehr News Agency that U.S. forces, with the help of British forces stationed in southern Iraq, had made extensive efforts to conceal their actions. Remember the old joke? I think it was David Letterman said, you know, I mean, this was back a year ago. When everybody was wondering, when are they going to find the weapons of mass destruction? And he said, they'll find them as soon as FedEx gets there. And, well, apparently FedEx is on its way. He added, Back to the news story. He added that the cargo was unloaded during the night as attention was still focused on the aftermath of the deadly bombings in Karbala and the signing of Iraq's interim constitution. The source said that in order to avoid suspicion, ordinary cargo ships were used to download the cargo, which consisted of weapons produced in the 1980s and the 1990s. That being back in the 1980s, of course, when Donald Rumsfeld was selling weapons to Saddam Hussein. And the 1990s, of course, being when Dick Cheney and Halliburton were selling products and helping Saddam Hussein. So, you know, apparently we've still got some of that stuff left over and are now delivering it. He mentioned the fact that the United States had facilitated Iraq's weapons of mass destruction program during the 1980 through 88 Iran-Iraq war. During the Reagan administration, when Rumsfeld was running this thing, and said that some of the weapons being downloaded are similar to those weapons. The source went on to say that the rest of the weapons were probably transferred in vans to an unknown location somewhere in the vicinity of Basra overnight. In other words, according to the Iranian news service, sometime between now and the election in November, we're going to discover weapons of mass destruction in Iran, in Iraq. What a surprise that will be, won't it? Absolutely shocking. Absolutely shocking. Who knows? Maybe it'll be. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number. And Bud, North Carolina, is on the line. Hey, Bud, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, thank you. Heard you on the Sirius satellite radio while I was driving along.
Great.
And changing the subject a little bit from what you're just talking about there, but regarding the Walmart issue.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to agree with you about Walmart, but you made it sound like Walmart has sprang up in the last 3 years of the Bush administration.
I lay a lot of responsibility for this at the feet of Bill Clinton, although it really goes back to Ronald Reagan.
Okay, well, thank you. I voted for Bush, and I'll vote for him again, but I think this time I'll be voting more against Kerry than for Bush. But I'll have to say I'm fairly conservative, and I'm a capitalist, but multinational corporations is an adulteration of true capitalism.
Well, the problem, as Adam Smith and Thomas Jefferson both pointed out, and Jefferson most eloquently, is that when any single source of wealth, corporations were the major form back then. The largest in the 1700s was the British East India Company, which was the focus of everybody's anger. It's why the Boston Tea Party happened. Mm-hmm. That when a single source of wealth becomes so powerful that it can threaten a sovereign nation, that it can affect legislation, that it can change the rules of the game by which business is played, then democracy is at risk. And that's what's happening here.
Well, that's been happening for, 50 years, probably 100 years, maybe 200. So, again, that's not a sellout by the Bush administration to big business. I don't think it's
much different. I agree.
I think there might be a dime's worth of difference between the Democrats and Republicans on that issue.
Well, there have been cycles.
My point is that, I don't shop at Walmart personally. And I've got a friend here who's got a little food packaging business, and he said he had a brand that Walmart wanted, and they recruited him several times real hard, and he said, I won't do it. He said, because I know what'll happen.
Yep.
They'll get the menu, or the recipe, I'm sorry. They'll squeeze me on the price, like you talked about the pickle company, every year, but they'll have the recipe, and they'll just put it out, and then I'm toast. But the reason Walmart's so successful, and the reason we've got everything we've got is it's all our fault, okay? The people. If Walmart wasn't stampeded by all these shoppers, they wouldn't be doing what they're doing.
No, I disagree.
Everybody goes to Walmart because it's cheaper. They have, they say that when Walmart was first achieving this nationwide prominence, people would go up to the Ozark foothills up there and see the computer system, and they'd think they were in the NORAD Defense Center. They were just agog.
Yeah.
At the sophistication of the tracking and ordering, all that stuff. So you got to hand it to them. But just another vignette, about 15 years ago, I was a PTA president. I called on a knitting company here to make a donation, okay? And the guy says, well, we're not in very good shape right now. I don't think we can do it. And they had a big sewing room, with 100 sewing machines. It was dark. Mm-hmm. And he said, we're shipping everything to, I don't know where it was, Malaysia, Puerto Rico at the time, about 15 years ago.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, God, I hate to see that. And he said, we do too. He said, but we made the pants here. We can ship it down there and get them. So they come back. So it's the same pair of pants, okay? The ones we make here, we sell for $25. The one from there, we sell them for $18. You put them out in the same store side by side, which ones sell?
Yeah, now here's
okay, that's our fault.
No, and I strongly disagree with you, bud. You know, I understand your point, and it's the point that's being made by most of the conservative talk show hosts and most of those who are apologists for the corporations. But the reality is, now, number one, that's really a way of blaming the victim. That's like saying that girl was raped because she was too pretty. I mean, we are
an extreme example, but go ahead.
Yeah, we are the victims of this, but we did not bring it about. What happened, and although you do make an absolutely accurate point that people want low prices and people will go where there are low prices, and increasingly people are having to because the middle class is being wiped out and more of us are the working poor, and the working poor are going to go wherever the lowest price is because they simply have no choice. But the bottom line is that business is a game. Just like baseball, just like soccer, just like hockey, just like anything else, business is a game. And the rules of the game, and the game operates on a playing field, which you and I provide. You and I provide that playing field with our tax dollars. That playing field is called the court system that allows corporations to enforce contracts. It's called like the Secretary of State's office, which allows corporations to exist. We authorize the existence of corporations. It's played on the playing field of the public roads that you know Walmart employees travel to get to work. It's played on the playing field of the public water system that they use and the public sewer system. It's played on the playing field of the public infrastructure, the rights of way over which telephone lines travel so that they can do business. They can call their suppliers. They can transfer all their money to Little Rock every night when they push the button and the giant vacuum cleaner sucks all the money.
All the profits from our local Walmart store going out to Arkansas.
Right, and the bottom line is that it's a game, and it's a game that's played on a field, on a playing field that you and I pay for and provide, number one. And number two, according to rules that you and I, that is we the people, our government, have defined. And historically, from the 1787 with the ratification of the Constitution up until 1980 when Ronald Reagan started systematically dismantling this with what George Bush Sr. accurately referred to as voodoo economics and now is called the conservative agenda. During that period of time, the rules of the game were that if a corporation became so large that they made it impossible for others to compete with them, that was called anti-competitive behavior or monopolistic behavior. In fact, there was a game that came out in the 1920s called Monopoly that helped people understand this. Right. And in 1880, December 1st, 1880, Senator Sherman introduced Senate Bill No. 1, the Sherman Antitrust Act, to put an end to these kind of things. And since then, there have been five other laws that have either strengthened or weakened it as time went on. But basically, Ronald Reagan stopped enforcing the Sherman Antitrust Act, and Bill Clinton never picked it up. George Bush never picked it up. It's still there, but nobody's doing anything about it. So, number one, Walmart is violating, in my opinion, the Sherman Antitrust Act. They are acting in ways that are destructive to communities and anti-competitive. We set the rules. And okay, yes, we are allowing them to do that in that the government is us. But you know, no, I don't think that we're the victims, number one. And number two, the
wage... Well,
we're
the victims, but you're saying it's not... We're not the
I'm not saying solution. I'm saying that we're not the cause of the problem. I'm saying the cause of the problem is that we have been brainwashed by conservatives, and I'm not saying Republicans because there's Democrats who are in on this too. In fact, maybe even a majority of them. We have been brainwashed by people who believe in this conservative religion, and it's not even an ideology. It's a religion because it's like, you know, religion is faith in things unseen. I mean every time they try to do this back in the Gilded Age, get government out of business, stop enforcing the rules, and the result was that you wipe out the middle class. The middle class is an artificial thing. A middle class doesn't normally exist in a society. Look at the history of Europe, a thousand-year history of Europe. No middle class. There was a small mercantilist class.
The aristocracy and the serfs.
That's right. And that is what normal laissez-faire capitalism will provide for you. And what we in the United States said is, hey,
what will it provide?
It will provide serfs? Yeah, it'll provide wealthy people and serfs, you know, and a small mercantilized class. And what we said is, hey, if we're going to provide the playing field and we're going to define the rules, we're going to set up rules in a way that if people are going to do business, that's fine. They can make money. They can do business all day long. We're all in favor of that. I'm entirely in favor. I started 8 corporations in my life. I'm entirely in favor. But the first priority is that they have to serve we the people. They have to serve the public good because we're authorizing them. We're letting them play this game. We're not going to let them play this game in a way that harms us. And Franklin Roosevelt got that. And he changed the rules of the game. He in the 1930s, he set it up so that you had to allow unions to form. If capital could form into unions in the form of corporations and trade associations, then labor had to have the right to do that as well. Between the minimum wage laws and unionization, we brought about a middle class in the United States. And when Reagan started taking that apart, that was the end of the middle class. And so that's my analysis of it. And that's where I think the real problem is.
I disagree with it's all Ronald Reagan's fault. I think the anti Trust.
Oh, I don't think it's all his fault.
The mergers and acquisitions during the Clinton era made the Reagan years look like you know, elementary.
Oh, I agree. We're out of time.
What about
years from now? The winter forecast in parts of the world might have more rain and less snow. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Global warming is likely to change patterns of rain and snow around the world. For parts of North America, that might mean winters that are wetter than today. Dick Weatherald is a climate expert with the U.S. government's National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. He studies the way patterns of rain and snow might change as the atmosphere warms up, and he uses the most up-to-date computer models in his work. Weatherald compared the results of his research with those from other computer systems.
And what we're seeing consistently is an increase in precipitation in middle latitudes during most of the winter season and early spring season.
Weatherald says those changes will affect the northern part of the United States and the southern part of Canada. He says the increase in winter precipitation is likely to come as more rain, not more snow. That could reduce the amount of water that percolates down into groundwater aquifers.
Rainfall tends to run off very quickly. It doesn't have a chance to run into the ground. Whereas snowfall tends to melt off usually fairly slowly. And that slower melting allows the water to percolate into the ground and recharge the groundwater supply. It makes a big difference. Snowfall is good. Snowfall is very beneficial to the water table because it allows the water to go into the ground rather than simply running off.
Groundwater is essential for providing water to rivers and lakes and to wetlands that are fed by springs. It's also an important source of water for drinking and irrigation. Weatherald has written a paper on this research that will be published in the Journal of Climate this spring. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
The war they are in has been declared over by the same man who lied them into it. Their reward? Combat pay cut in half. $1.5 billion cut to their family housing. $20 billion cut to military health care. No health care for reservists.
Lancers, bring them on.
Thousands wounded, hundreds dead, and no end in sight. If we support our troops, why can't Bush? Or is this what they mean when they say an army of one?
For years, economists have defined the economic health of a country by its gross domestic product. Trouble is, every time a forest falls, the GDP goes up. With every oil spill, the GDP goes up. Every time a cancer patient is diagnosed, the GDP goes up. Is this how we measure economic progress? Economists must learn to subtract.
Setting up a radio station? Wondering what software to use? Listen to the words of Mike Chandler of WOBS in Florida talking about the Tune Tracker system.
I love the software. I mean, it is rock solid. It has not burped one single single time. This thing has not stopped. And I tell you, I've got some software that I run at two of my other radio stations that cost tons and tons more. One I paid, I think, $1,500 for it. And then one system, which was the Arrakis DigiLink system, I paid $15,000 for it. But this rivals my $15,000 system.
As Mike Tadler said, the TuneTracker system is rock solid. And the price? Only $349.95 for the Pro version with traffic interface and only $149.95 for the original TuneTracker 2. Either way, you'll have a radio automation system that performs like systems costing thousands more. For more information, go to our website, www.TuneTrackerSystems.com. www.TuneTrackerSystems.com.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Is it too much to ask? I want a comfortable bed that won't hurt my back. Food to fill me up and warm clothes and all that stuff. Shouldn't I have this? Shouldn't I have this?
And welcome back. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program, where we dare to ask, is Walmart a person? And we dare to say, no, I don't think so. Bill in Chicago has some thoughts on this. Hey, Bill, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hey, Tom. I just want to speak to this one specific thing of Vlasic Pickles and Walmart. They made a really bad business decision to put all their eggs in one basket.
Well, there's the old, you know, back when I was in business, we always had the, when we owned an ad agency and a travel agency, or a couple of the businesses that we owned,
right,
where we did business with the public or with other companies and had a lot of clients. And you always tried to follow the 80-20 rule. You never let more, you know, 20% of your customers dominate 80% of your business. I mean, you know, once you hit that threshold, you're in trouble.
Right. I've been self-employed for 25 years. I know that too. So, you know, I don't shop at Walmart. I will not shop at Walmart. You know, I think they're un-American, but, you know, Vlasic Pickles just made a bad move.
Yeah. Yeah, they did. But the bottom line really is Walmart evil? I mean, you know,
yes.
Walmart, I mean, you know, there is no shortage of behavior on their part that we can criticize. But the bottom line is that they are playing a game, and that we have the right to set the rules of that game, and we have largely abdicated that, and we've largely done it because we've been believing Americans have been believing this pablum that Ronald Reagan. You know, our last caller, he said, well, you know, I don't lay all this at Ronald Reagan's feet. Jimmy Carter actually got this. I mean, he broke up AT&T. He said, this is a monopoly. This is wrong.
Yeah, but they're back together again.
Well, sort of. Actually, no. I mean, you know, the new AT&T is not the old AT&T. And
well,
what happened when
SPC is, though.
Yeah, but what happened when AT&T got broke up was that shareholder value actually increased. You know, large is not necessarily more efficient.
Oh, I know.
And it is time in America for us to say, hey, you know, as Teddy Roosevelt said, we are all in favor of small business. We are all, that is the bedrock of America. It's the single largest employment sector in America, our small and medium-sized businesses. We're all in favor of these folks. We're all in favor of them succeeding and doing well, and we're going to do everything we can to support that. But when big business becomes so powerful that it runs the risk of becoming the tail that wags the dog of governance. And governance is us. I mean, this is the power that controls the United States and in many ways influences and controls the world. Then we're going to appropriately put limits on it. And WTO and NAFTA and GATT, and I know, you know, Bud wanted to get into that, and Bud, I hope you'll call back. We'll carry on the conversation. We just, you know, we have these hard breaks at 20 minutes after the hour, 29 minutes, and at 50 minutes after the hour, and I just, you've got to go, you know. But anyhow, these were attempts. Not just attempts, I mean, they were successful, to rewrite the rules of business in ways that did not take into consideration human rights, did not take into consideration the rights of workers, that did not take into consideration the fact that government plays a role in creating and sustaining a middle class, that did not take into consideration things like the environment and the environmental impact. I mean, one in three of us is going to get cancer in our lifetimes. And that's something that's relatively unprecedented. You go back and you look at skeletons of people 300, 400, 500 years ago, it wasn't that way. When I was in California this weekend, a couple of people had just gotten tested. They found over 100 different carcinogens, cancer-causing chemicals, in their bloodstream. There's now this industry in California testing people.
Yeah, that's another thing. The other day you had that guy on from Ayn Rand, and he was saying, you know, let businesses do what they want. And nobody ever brought up the idea of pollution.
Yeah.
You know, let them run rampant, and all we'll have is dirty air and water.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, the mandate of business is to externalize costs and internalize profits. And if by externalizing costs you can dump them on we the people, you can dump them into the commons, all the better. It saves money. And that's why we have things like the Environmental Protection Agency to prevent corporations from doing what they naturally would do, which is try to externalize their costs, dump their costs on us while they keep all the profits. It's just not right. Anyhow, I appreciate your call, Bill, thank you very much. 1-866-889-8894. This is Tom Hartman. 29 minutes past the hour. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The glass ceiling persists throughout the world, but it's less prevalent in Russia than anywhere else. A 26-nation poll by business advisory firm Grant Thornton found that nearly 90% of Russian corporations include women in the ranks of senior management. The Philippines ranks second, followed by the U.S., while Japan, the Netherlands, and Pakistan were at the bottom of the list. But even for frontrunner Russia, women only made up 42% of senior management positions.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. The Federal Open Market Committee meets tomorrow to determine whether to raise U.S. interest rates, which Alan Greenspan is expected to keep at a low level following a dismal report on February's unemployment rate. But despite persistent unemployment, the chairman of the Federal Reserve says efforts to prevent companies from sending jobs overseas to hire cheaper labor could result in further stagnation of the U.S. economy. Greenspan faults the U.S. education system for producing too many low-skilled workers, lending to the current 2 million unemployed people who have been unable to find a job for 6 months or more.
The Bush administration created the position of Assistant Secretary of Commerce for Manufacturing last Labor Day, but it only got around to filling the job this month. Now the nominee has backed away from the honor after his experience with outsourcing comes to light. Anthony Raimondo withdrew his nomination after it was discovered that his Nebraska-based company, which makes prefab metal building materials, laid off dozens of line workers in 2002, then announced plans for construction of a factory in China 4 months later. Raimondo, who spent last week in China checking up on that new factory, calls the criticism a misunderstanding.
A lawsuit filed against contractors building the Yucca Mountain dump claims there's more than nuclear waste to worry about at the facility. Former tunnel supervisor Gene Grigo says that silica dust kicked up during the construction of the nation's largest nuclear dump is to blame for his chronic pulmonary disease. Grigo says he hopes his suit will win class action status to represent as many as 1,500 others who may have been exposed to the toxic dust. The suit is aimed at Bechtel and four other construction firms.
Members of unions affiliated with the AFL-CIO will pay 4 more cents per month in dues from now through mid-2005 to finance election spending this year. The dues hike will raise about $25 million for the AFL-CIO's war chest, which is expected to burn through $44 million on the 2004 elections. That's up $4 million from 2000. This does not include political spending done by each individual union in the Federation, which is expected this year to be more than double that of the AFL-CIO itself.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Mexican immigrants who come to the United States hoping to find a better life also find workplace hazards that make them the most likely to die on the job. An investigation by the Associated Press finds that Mexican immigrants are 80% more likely to die on the job than native-born Americans, and about twice as likely as other immigrant groups. The AP says that's not only because Mexicans tend to take more dangerous work, but because fines for employers whose workers die at work are so low.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
She's speaking of George W. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here, exposing the con and conservative. Here's the bottom line. If you want to deal with the toxicity of Walmart in the United States, then let's undo Taft-Hartley, the 1947 law that pit the North against the South, that some Southern states then said, okay, we don't have to have unions. And you saw people fleeing, you saw businesses fleeing to the South in search of cheap labor. And then it went national. Bill Clinton in 1996, as I recall, with NAFTA and GATT, and that, it went international with these trade treaties. And we can reverse these things. And we can go back to the way things were. We ran the country for over 200 years just fine, thank you very much. And if you want to bring American jobs home, you do what all the other countries in the world do. We don't call Italy protectionist. We don't call France protectionist. We don't call Germany protectionist. We don't call England protectionist. We don't call Japan protectionist. We don't call China protectionist because they have tariffs that say if you manufacture something in your country with labor that costs less than our labor, then you're going to have to pay a tax when it gets imported into our country. We have been doing this in the United States since 1784, and we can and just in the last decade or so we have stopped. It's, talk to your grandparents. Ask them about, it's the people who remember Roosevelt and Truman. And to that matter, to that extent, Eisenhower. I mean, Eisenhower understood this stuff. Eisenhower was a true conservative in many regards. I have a lot of respect for Dwight Eisenhower. He said a lot of very good things and promoted many, many positive policies. And people got it back then. People understood government has a role in defining the rules of the game. There was no military-industrial complex when Eisenhower left office. It was nascent. It was just beginning. He warned us about it. There were not, big corporations. People ask, okay, what's the significance of the trade deficit? It's another great question. So we just had this huge trade deficit with the world. I mean, most of it was with China. Japan, what's the big deal? So we buy more than we sell. The big deal is that you've got to pay for that with something. And if you just print dollars to pay for it, then you end up with a worthless currency, a hyperinflation, and things just fall apart. And we're not doing that. I mean, we are doing it to some small extent, but we're not doing it the way that, for example, Germany did in the 20s. So instead, what do? You have to give in exchange for the things that you import, all those things that we buy at Walmart. We have to give China something in exchange for that. And what we are giving them and other countries around the world, and in particularly the Middle East, the countries that we're buying oil from, we are giving them our assets that produce income. They are owning our businesses. So you see, Toyota's building a plant in Ohio. Isn't that wonderful? Well, sort of. Yeah, it's creating some jobs. But where are the profits going? The profits are not going to build more factories in America. The profits are not going to start new businesses in America. The profits are going back to Japan. Well, how did they get the money to start that business in Japan in the first place? We ran a trade deficit with them. Japan in the last 2 months bought $200 billion worth of United States securities, worth of our treasury bills and treasury notes, our debt. So who's going to earn the 4 or 5 or 6% interest that you and I are having to pay a good chunk of our tax bill, about between a fifth and a third of our total tax bill that we are paying now in interest on the debt that Ronald Reagan ran up and now George Bush, these being the two biggest. Between these two guys, they account for over 80% of the total debt of the United States because they had this policy of spend and borrow. And it's like living on a credit card. You live on a credit card and you run up a $100,000 bill on your credit card and all your neighbors think you're living large. But the day will come. And the day is now. And we're having to pay increasing amounts of our tax dollars. And where is it going? Is that going to people in the United States who hold the debt? No, increasingly, it's going to China, it's going to Saudi Arabia, it's going to the United Arab Emirates, it's going to Kuwait. It's going to nations with whom we are running a trade deficit. It's why Bertelsmann was able to come in and buy Random House, the company that publishes my books. Bertelsmann's a German company, biggest company publisher in Germany. A French company owns Simon & Schuster. And on it goes. Why? This is the result of the people say trade deficit. People don't understand. What is the significance of the trade deficit? It means we're giving away our country. And George Bush is on record saying that's just fine with him as long as it keeps the economy going long enough that he can get reelected. This is the most cynical kind of politics I have ever in my whole entire life seen. And there was no shortage of cynicism during the Clinton years, and there was no shortage of cynicism during the Bush senior years or the Nixon years, but this tops it all. I mean, this is just absolutely incredible. 1-866-889-8894. Roberta in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, Roberta, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, Tom. Cynical. I want to say that when it comes to the eternal quest of Jefferson and the Madison Manifesto, you are definitely the keeper of the flame. I don't know what we'd do without you because there just aren't enough of you on the air. And you're such a keeper of liberty because you're accessible to all the complexions of American citizens. I mean, you talk to these two fellows that just called previously, make me think we should divide our country instead of being called liberal and conservative, which we all have a part of. We should start saying that we're all either true patriots or fascists.
Well, really what it boils down to is people who are patriots in as much as they believe in the commons and the common good and the future of our nation and making decisions that are going to help the seventh generation. And on the other hand, opportunists, people who are saying get while the getting's good. And that's what the Bush administration is doing. They borrowed over $1 trillion from my children to give tax breaks to their wealthy buddies so that those guys would give them hundreds of millions of dollars in campaign contributions.
Well, you know,
that's wrong.
There's a way we can get that back working through through the Constitution. I mean, if the corporations want to be called persons, if the entity choose to be called persons, isn't there a boomerang in there? I mean, I think maybe Ralph Nader could be better put to use as a lawyer if he could make the case, I mean, like William Jennings Bryan or something like that, to these persons, accusing them of treason for stealing the wealth of a nation and everything that we used to hold free. The best things in life used to be free, air, water, growing our own food. They've taken it all and perverted its use to the most personal, private, egregious use.
Yeah.
And
this is again, you know, internalizing profits and externalizing costs. Take the commons and use it. You know, this is the privatization agenda. We had this guy on last week from this conservative from Ayn Rand, and you know, let's turn everything that the government should care for, that we the people collectively own, and let's give it to stockholders so that they can earn their 15% dividend free of any payroll tax, free of any Social Security tax, although they qualify for Social Security, and they can sit around their pools and get their check checks every month and only pay a maximum 15% tax. Corporations which make such use of the commons, of the playing field that we provide for them, are in 1953 they were paying 35% of our taxes. Today they're paying 7% of our taxes. And they're complaining about that. Snow and O'Neill are both on the record as saying there should be no corporate income tax. Give me a break.
Oh, I think it's treasonous, and I think a good lawyer could make a case for that. And since the death penalty for treason has been given some arbitrary leeway by a court, therefore a fine, then I would say a $10 million fine would be a good minimum to set on these corporate pirates.
Well, Roberta, good points, and I agree with them all. And I think that what we need to be doing is waking up Americans to the fact that in a representative, in a constitutionally limited representative democratic republic like we have, which is sometimes referred to as a liberal democracy. It's not a pure democracy like Greece had. We have what's called a liberal democracy, which is a constitutionally limited democratic republic. In that kind of a government, we get to set the rules. And I don't think most Americans realize that we get to set the rules. And every day out there in the business press, every day out there in the Wall Street Journal, every day out there on TV, you have these cons going on and on about, it's the free market that will decide. And you read their own literature and they know that there's no such thing as a free market. The free market exists on the back of government. The marketplace is an artifact of government. It is something that we create. We define the rules, and we can define the rules in a way that helps the rich get richer and creates a serf class, which we have done very effectively for 1,000 years. It was called feudalism. And yes, it's a stable form of government, as Alexander Hamilton and John Adams pointed out. But it doesn't satisfy the requirements of the Constitution of the United States, as Thomas Jefferson pointed out. I mean, they just said it so clearly that the preamble to the Constitution, we the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice. What does the free market have to do with justice? Nothing. Ensure domestic tranquility. What does having a serf class and a wealthy class have to do with ensuring domestic tranquility? Nothing. Provide for the common defense. We're going to protect ourselves. Yes, we do play a role, we the people. Promote the general welfare. What does the free market have to do with that? Nothing. These are things that we should appropriately be taking care of. And secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity to ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. Nowhere in there does it say, and make it possible for the rich to get incredibly rich and keep a lot of people in slavery. Keep in mind, corporate power can aggregate. Capital can form unions. Money can form unions. Wealthy folks can form unions. They're called corporations and they're called trade associations. It's perfectly legal and it should be legal. And there should be a balance to that power. As Roosevelt said so eloquently, as Teddy Roosevelt, as Abraham Lincoln said, when he sent federal troops in to prevent the Pinkerton services and the other private armies from beating up and killing strikers, that labor should have the right also to organize and represent itself. And because really, ultimately, it's about power. And when labor has power and corporations have power and there is some balance in that power, and that balance is provided by we the people defining the rules of the game, then you have this incredible thing that happens called the emergence of a middle class. And if Roosevelt had not made the unions powerful and possible and had not established a minimum wage that at the time was actually close to a living wage, we would not have had a middle class. And once Ronald Reagan started taking it apart, the middle class began to vanish. And you don't have to be a rocket scientist to see that this is happening. 1-866-889-8894. Tracy in Washington, D.C. is on the line. Hey, Tracy, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, how are you, Tom?
Great, but I'll get better. What's up?
Good. Great show. I wanted to, in addition to my condolences to the Spanish people, I wanted to congratulate them, too, because on turning the government out, because the Spanish people made it very clear a year ago that they did not want to go to war against Iraq, and they did not want their government to support the United States in its unilateral move of war.
Oh, on a per capita basis, they had one of the two largest demonstrations in the world.
Absolutely.
Against the war.
On February 15th of last year.
Yeah.
And they were concerned that the chickens would come home to roost, which it did, and so they had to throw the bums out.
Yeah,
so I want to congratulate them.
I agree. And Jose Luis Rodriguez Zapatero, who is now the prime minister of the prime minister-elect of Spain, said, and I quote, "The war has been a disaster. The occupation continues to be a disaster. There must be consequences. There has been one already, the election result. The second will be that Spanish troops will come home."
Yeah, and the I think the point here, Tom, is that, you know, are the Iraqi people better off without Saddam Hussein? Absolutely. Are the rest of us better off as a consequence of this war? Remains an open question.
Yeah. Well, and ultimately, are the Iraqi people better off with Saddam Hussein is a question that I really think you need to look at in a 5 or 10 year period. When we intervened in Iraq and we replaced a democratically elected government with the Shah of Iran, look what it's led to. I mean, 30 years of consequences. You just can't look at a 6 month window and say, oh, gee, that's how it is. It doesn't work that way, particularly when you go in and intervene with force. You can't create peace with force, ultimately. It doesn't happen. You know, Gandhi pointed it out. Jesus pointed it out. These are eternal truths.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I'm ranting.
Good work.
Sorry. Okay. Yeah, thank you. Thanks for the call, Tracy. I appreciate it. Nice to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Yeah, Spain's new prime minister is saying, number one, the first consequence of the war is that he got elected, and the second is that the Spanish troops are going to come home. Fascinating. Will the same thing happen in the United States? Are we going to see the same kind of backlash? I suspect so. 10 minutes before the hour, this is Tom Hartman with you, high up in the Green Mountains of the People's Republic of Vermont, broadcasting truth. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America. Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is a small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do they know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
I can't. I have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or fold right. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Nureyev. Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Sure about that?
Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, hi. How you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went up with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. Donald Rumsfeld caught lying again. Isn't it unfortunate? I mean, I remember, you know, during Watergate being embarrassed for Nixon. There have been times when I have been, as an American citizen, saddened or ashamed by the behavior of our elected officials. And here, Rumsfeld, I mean, Rumsfeld has been running around saying, immediate threat. We never said there was an immediate threat. Yes, we went to war in Iraq. It was an accident. Or, you know, I mean, he hasn't been saying that. But I mean, you know, no, there's no immediate threat. And he got called on it this weekend.
Well, let me just ask you this. If they did not have these weapons of mass destruction.
This is Bob Schieffer.
Granted, all of that is true. Mm-hmm. Why then did they pose an immediate threat to us, to this country?
Here's the lie.
You and a few other critics are the only people I've heard use the phrase immediate threat. I didn't. The president didn't.
Oh, yeah?
And it's become kind of folklore that's what's happened. The president went.
You're saying that nobody in the administration said that?
Schieffer nails him now.
Everybody in the administration and say nobody said that.
The vice president didn't say that?
Not, if you have any citations.
Here they come.
I'd like to see them.
We have one here that says, some have argued that the nuclear threat from Iraq is not imminent, that Saddam is at least 5 to 7 years away from having nuclear weapons. I would not be so certain.
Mm-hmm.
And now there's a long pause, and Rumsfeld is like, you know, just... and then he starts to...
I tried to be precise, I tried to be accurate. I'm so
no terrorist state poses a greater or more immediate threat to the security of our people and the stability of the world than the regime of Saddam Hussein in Iran.
And so here we are, Donald Rumsfeld, caught lying on tape once again. Tragedy. This was on the CBS program Face the Nation. And the United States deserves better. You know, the United States is an extraordinary and noble country, and we deserve better from our leaders. This is Tom Harbin, 2 minutes before the hour.
Hear the lonely say that the heart has got to open in a fundamental way. Democracy's coming to the USA.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Here's today's Dal Bob Report. Sociologists often turn to infant mortality rates as an indicator of a country's well-being, and by this measure, we're slipping. For the first time in more than 40 years, the overall infant mortality rate increased from 6.8 deaths per 1,000 in 2001 to 7 such deaths in 2002. The Centers for Disease Control speculates women's decisions to have children later in life may account for the higher rate, though the CDC's report makes no mention of poverty, joblessness, or food insecurity.
Here's today's Dal Bob Report. A recent report prepared by the Democratic staff of the U.S. House Education and Workforce Committee hangs the most solid number yet on the hidden costs of shopping at Walmart. The committee figures each Walmart store with a staff of 200 or more puts a $420,750 burden on local federal taxpayers for social services costs. These would include housing, education, energy, and tax benefits awarded to workers like those at Walmart who are not paid a living wage.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
News break from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Don Waller in New York. The leader of Spain's victorious socialists said Monday that he will bring his nation's troops home from Iraq by June 30th, fulfilling a campaign promise a day after his party's win in elections overshadowed by terrorist bombings. The surprise defeat Sunday of Prime Minister José María Aznar's conservatives marked the first time a government that backed the U.S.-led war in Iraq has been voted out of office and came amid charges that Aznar made Spain a target for terrorists by supporting the war. Sweeping baggage checks for passengers on the very open U.S. rail transit systems are impractical despite the specter of a terrorist threat, a high-level Bush administration official said Monday. Undersecretary of Homeland Security Asa Hutchinson sought to counter accusations by some congressional Democrats that the administration has not committed sufficient money to protection of the U.S. rail and transit systems. In the wake of the terror attack that killed some 200 and injured hundreds more in Spain, the Department of Homeland Security last week put out a bulletin advising local law enforcement authorities and transit agencies to be vigilant. Two cutting-edge computer projects designed to preserve the privacy of Americans were quietly killed while Congress was restricting Pentagon data-gathering research in a widely publicized effort to protect innocent citizens from futuristic anti-terrorism tools. As a result, the government is quietly pressing ahead with research into high-powered computer data mining technology without the two most advanced privacy protections developed to police those terror-fighting tools. The privacy projects were small parts of the Pentagon's terrorist information awareness research, the brainchild of retired Admiral John Poindexter, who was driven from the Reagan administration in 1986 over the Iran-Contra scandal. Attorney General John Ashcroft was released from the hospital Sunday, 5 days after surgery to remove his gallbladder. Ashcroft will stay in his Washington home for some quiet rest as he continues to recuperate, Justice Department spokesman Mark Corallo said. Deputy Attorney General James Corney will continue to run the department until Ashcroft returns. More news after this.
This week on TBTM Radio.
I'm mad as heck, and I think I might take in some more.
Well, you know, I'm vaguely uncomfortable with the Bush presidency.
Oh, you're fired. You know, I asked our commander-in-chief today if he'd like to, like, me. Besides, it might be indecent.
And I don't have 500 grand to pay a fine.
Oh, we have to pay ourselves.
Yeah, like, hey, you know, that's a money-making scheme right there. And boy, how Crampton-like is that?
We'll make a million.
Norton, I got an idea. We'll make $1 million with it.
Gosh.
Take back the media. Ralphie and Ed.
Monday 9 Eastern at TakeBackTheMedia.com.
A Polish Benedictine nun is facing jail for driving a tractor into a car while drunk outside her convent in southwestern Poland, police said on Friday. The 45-year-old nun will be charged with drunk driving and causing an accident. The nun was 17 times over the country's legal alcohol limit for driving. For the Minuteman News Service, this is Don Waller in New York.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
It's back. The thing that just won't die has returned in mutated form to terrorize the good people of our country, gorging itself on gargantuan fistfuls of our First and Fourth Amendment rights. The thing was once known as TIA, Total Information Awareness, the Orwellian slash Frankensteinian creation of John Poindexter, the disgraced, convicted, and totally loopy former operative from the Reagan White House. Brought in from the cold by George W., Poindexter set up shop in a wing of the Pentagon called DARPA, Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency. At DARPA, the maniacal Poindexter put together his TIA, a supercomputerized program to gather every scrap of data there is on everybody, from our bank accounts to video rentals, our medical histories to photos of protests we've attended. All of this was to be sifted and sorted, ostensibly to detect suspicious behavior that would tag someone as a possible terrorist. Noting that this would make millions of Americans suspected terrorists and amount to a wholesale invasion of our people's privacy, the public screamed, Congress cut off TIA's funding, and Poindexter ultimately was forced back to disgrace land. But wait, TIA did not die. It morphed from DARPA to ARDA, Advanced Research and Development Activity, another secretive spook agency. While publicly pretending to kill TIA, congressional leaders had quietly funneled money to ARDA to resurrect TIA as the thing, which is now pursuing the exact same assault on our privacy as TIA was, even using some of Poindexter's old crew. ARDA says that its thing can wolf down a petabyte or more of data. How much is that? A petabyte will hold 40 pages of text on every man, woman, and child in the world. This is Jim Hightower saying, to help us finally drive a stake through the heart of this thing, call the Center for Democracy and Technology, 202-637-9800.
Well, I wonder who that could be. Can I help you?
Ah! Everybody, run for your lives!
A pack of crazed baboons. That's one thing you don't want in your house. One thing you do want in your house is a quieter floor with Blactanium plywood from Georgia Pacific. Blactanium holds onto nails better. That means your subflooring won't rub against them and will be less likely to squeak. Blactanium plywood. Build it better.
When you hear how big businesses get all the best technology for the best price, does it make you crazy? To calm down, here's a thought from the voice of reason. Get a Xerox M15i. It's not just a digital copier printer that gives you 16 quality pages a minute. It also scans and faxes in color. All that and more for a $66 a month lease. Big business or small, what could be more reasonable?
Call 1-800-ASK-XEROX for business lease details, toner and photo receipt.
Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Transforming the world by revitalizing democracy. Tom Hartman here with you. Welcome back to the third hour of our program. On this beautiful Monday, the 15th of March, Today is the Ides of March. The day that Julius Caesar got it. Et tu, Brute? Remember Brutus came up and stuck the knife in him? Boy, it's funny how you remember things. That's a long story. Anyway, I wrote a long poem about that when I was in high school. 4 or 5 page poem about the Ides of March. And I did it as an assignment both for Latin class and for English class. And in Latin class, I got an A. And in English class, I had the teacher accuse me of plagiarism, which just devastated me. She said, nobody. She said, it's impossible that a high school student could write this well. And it's funny, I didn't even remember it until 15 or 20 years later, but I stopped writing poetry for years and years as a result of that. But I wrote books instead, so which I guess is a good thing. Anyhow, it's the Ides of March. The Ides of March, the historic day in the history of Rome. 8 minutes past the hour, 1-866. It's a toll-free number. It's one of those newfangled ones. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number if you'd like to be on the program. Lots of interesting things to talk about here and things to get a handle on. The stuff with Medicare and the kind of fast footwork that's going on with the Bush administration, Walmart, what's going on with Walmart. Let's pick up Josh here. He's a truck driver on the road. Hey, Josh, where on the road are you?
I'm in Wisconsin.
Oh, great.
Yeah, nice that's place. Where I happen to be at this moment.
Yeah.
I just had a quick compliment and a general comment.
Okay.
The compliment is thank you for doing another excellent show. We need you. We need more people like you out there helping to counterbalance this barrage of propaganda we've been hit with. And also the general comment is we need to remember the price of liberty being eternal vigilance.
Yeah.
It's time for us collectively to be less apathetic and a little more proactive, wake up and take back some of our liberty that we've been swindled out of. And that's all I had to say, man. Thanks a lot for doing your show.
Okay, you're welcome. Thanks, Josh. And Josh, I'd say, in response to your thanks to me, I'd say, tag, you're it.
Right.
Spread it along. Pass it along. You will, in your professional and personal life, I'm sure, come into contact with lots and lots of people and have a lot of opportunities to spread the word. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number. 10 minutes past the hour, and John from Palm Desert, California is on the line. Hey, John, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, Tom. Just calling. You keep having all these conservative Republicans on in the first hour when I'm at work, so I never get to call in.
Uh-huh.
But the fellow earlier talking about our fault about Walmart.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think he was. I don't think he was. Pointing an accusing figure. It's just prevailing wisdom. I mean, conventional wisdom is, hey, they offer cheap stuff, people buy it, people must want it, and people don't realize it's not that simple.
I'd like to offer sort of a little thought experiment on that.
Sure.
Whenever we go shopping, just in the regular grocery store, if we had to let the market decide everything that we were going to, everything that we had to choose about, for example, you go to the meat market and you wonder, okay, is this cow been tested for, say, mad cow disease? What other diseases has it been tested for? Has it been fed growth steroids? Are those bad for me? And that's just the meat. You go onto the beans and whatever else you buy, and there's 100 different variables as to workers' rights, environmental issues, and chemicals and pollution and all that, that we have to take into account for, 60, 70, 100 items that we buy every couple of weeks?
Yeah, and what the conservatives would say is, if people really wanted to know if their food was clean, then they would say so. And then, in fact, there is actually some evidence of that, in as much as the organic food movement is growing like crazy. But the reality is that there's a lot of things that people don't even know that they need to know about, and that's the function
exactly.
of government.
And it brings up the sort of the second point, which is if a person does know all that and does want all that, and yet they're working at a job at which they're making this minimum wage payment, and they can't afford that 30%, 40% premium for organic foods, natural foods, and locally grown foods. How exactly do we deal with that?
Right. Then they eat fast foods and they end up obese.
Hmm?
Then they eat fast foods and they end up obese. And then the conservatives say, well, it's their own fault. They should have known that those French fries were going to make them fat. Well, you know, they don't own a car. They couldn't make it to a decent store. They couldn't afford fresh fat. Maybe. I mean, you know,
And to my mind, that's why things like a living wage and reasonable trade policy are absolutely vital. Because if we have a living wage that's really geared towards the price of living, and based on an industry average, then people can afford those sorts of price increases as they happen in response to labor. As long as we have a rational trade policy, people don't have to leave the country just so they can get around the environmental laws or the workers' laws that we all have agreed that we need here in this country to keep our standard of living high.
Yeah, and as I've said before, I mean, if we were to raise the minimum wage to a living wage, let's say we raised it to $15 an hour, to just pull a number out of the what many people would consider a high number out of the year. I don't think so. But let's say we raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour. People go, oh my God, everything in Walmart is going to cost more. Yes. But
you can afford it.
That's right. But you can afford to pay for it. And people will start. And what if we put up protectionist barriers? What if we went back to having, like they do in Japan and like they do in Greece and like they do in China? Why don't we put up some barriers that say if you're welcome to import goods from China? You can buy goods from China all day long. But if there's $10 worth of labor in a product, if it's made in the United States, and then that same labor only costs $1 in China, when you bring it into the United States, you pay a $9 tax on it so that the labor costs gets equalized. That's how tariffs have been working in the United States for over 200 years. It's how they've worked around the world ever since the first treaties they were called the Treaties of the Low Countries, and it was in southern Holland and northern Germany in that area, eastern Holland and northern Germany. And there was this consortium, you know, where they developed these first treaty that came up with this, and this was, you know, 600 years ago. Okay, and it works. It absolutely works. And people would say, well, then you'd have to pay more for the shoes. Yes, but we would have jobs where we would get a paycheck and we could afford to pay for the shoes. And people say, oh, it's unrealistic. And you say, no, not only is it not unrealistic, but it worked in the United States in the 1940s and the 1950s and the 1960s and the 1970s until Ronald Reagan began dismantling it in the 1980s with voodoo economics. And here we are. And Bill Clinton bought into it in the Democratic Leadership Council. And still a lot of Democrats buy into it, and the Republicans have bought it hook, line, and sinker, with the exception of a few noble ones. I mean, there are some Republicans who actually get it as well. And their reward is they get referred to as rhinos, Republican in name only, and attacked by their own party. But
I actually voted in, back when I was living in Maine, I voted in Olympia Snow.
Yes.
I had a star record on VoteSmart and thought, this is someone I can live with. And
yeah, I voted for Jim Jeffords. He's a Republican. I mean, he was when I voted for him.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there are some decent Republicans out there. It's funny. I voted for a Democrat, Leahy. I voted for Republican Jeffords, and I voted for a Green Ralph Nader in the 2000 election. You know, I guess that really makes me an independent. But in any case, we need to have rational trade policy in the United States. And right now, this guy, the Bush administration, is trying to use fiscal policy, monetary policy, fiddling with the value of the dollar as a way of adjusting trade policy. And, you know, they're trying to talk China into devaluing their currency. And China just yesterday just said, or not yesterday, two, 3 days ago, last week, said, no way. The United States is saying, well, the Chinese currency is undervalued by 40%, which means that if China was to allow the yuan to float up 40% relative to the dollar, Chinese imports would become 40% more expensive. The prices would rise in the United States. More people would, you know, American industries would be more competitive. Yeah, all that stuff is true, but it would happen right across the board. And there are some industries that are really critical and really should be here. And there are other industries where really it actually might be a good idea to make stuff in China. And we need to have trade policy where we're looking at these individual industries and individual items and saying, in an intelligent and rational fashion, these are the things that have to do with, for example, national security. The Chinese bought a company in, as I recall, Terre Haute, Indiana, that made magnets, a particular type of ferrite core magnet that's used for the guidance systems for our missiles. They bought this company. They operated it for about a year. They took the technology to China. They shut down the factory. And now, in order for us to build a missile, we have to buy the parts from China, from a dictatorship in China. from a dictatorship that has threatened Taiwan. And so now you got the Bush administration saying to Taiwan, don't talk about independence. Don't talk about independence. Yeah, don't be upset about those Chinese missiles pointed at you. Why? Because we can't get our own missiles to work without parts from China. This is nuts. It's nuts.
I'd just like to make one last little point before I take off, and that is that as long as the market decides for labor costs, it's always going to be driven by the lowest common denominator, the person who can work the cheapest.
Sure.
And then everyone else is going to have to struggle down to that level. I think if we've got a living wage, if someone is able to live cheaper than that, then that's just more money that they're going to be pumping back into the economy in the forms of luxury goods that would not otherwise be available.
Or savings.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's back into investments or back into the community.
Yeah, I mean, you know, keep in mind the whole idea of buying things on time is really a relatively recent invention. You can argue, and there are economists who argue, and I agree with them, that the Roaring Twenties were in large part the result of three things. Number one, you had a huge loss of working people as a result of the flu epidemics of 1818 and 1819. Millions of people died, which shrunk the labor force, which made the demand for labor greater, which drove up the prices of labor. Number two, you had World War I, which killed off a lot of American men. And number three, and perhaps most important, radio in the 20s was what the internet was in the 1990s. Radio came out of nowhere around 1910, 1912, 1914. RCA's stock tracked up in the 1920s the same way Microsoft's did in the 1990s. And the ability to buy things on time, to offer consumers the ability to buy things now, take possession of them now, and pay for them over the course of a year or two, was a brand new thing that came with radio. RCA started this, and people started buying things on time in the late 1920s. And that credit crunch catching up with them was one of the things that made the 1930s, the early 1930s, so terrible. And here we are. We're going, you know, it's going around again. Anyhow, I'm ranting. I got to move along. Yeah, that was John. John, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. And, in fact, the music says this is time to take a break. 20 minutes past the hour. We got a couple of other callers here. Stick around. We'll get to you right after this break. Talk radio for the rest of us. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program brought to you by Small Dog Electronics, smalldog.com, and the Organic Wine Company, 1-888-ECO-WINE or ecowine.com. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Fertilizing your lawn can sometimes help the environment, according to a Wisconsin scientist. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Keeping your lawn healthy reduces runoff, and that's good for area lakes and streams. John Steer is a horticulturist at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Steer says people have the common misperception that applying fertilizer to their lawns will pollute lakes and drinking water. He says in reality, most lawns go unfertilized, and that might be worse for the environment.
We actually get less runoff with properly fertilized turf, not excessive, than we do with unfertilized turf. And the reason is because this causes the plants to become more vigorous, more healthy, deeper root systems, larger root systems, more leaf area. This situation causes the turf to actually act as a better environmental filter to prevent runoff.
Steer advocates the use of integrated pest management to keep lawns healthy. That means finding methods other than chemicals to control weeds and other pests. Steer says that does take some effort.
For turf, that boils down to three things. If a person wants to have good quality turf that stops erosion, helps filter runoff, provides oxygen and so forth, one of the best ways to do that is to properly mow it, fertilize it, and irrigate it. Those three things, very healthy turf, can almost always be maintained without using pesticides. But most often, people neglect one, two, or all three of those.
Steer says you can get advice on how to manage your lawn in ways that are safe for your family and the environment by contacting your local cooperative extension office. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
Mexican immigrants who come to the United States hoping to find a better life also find workplace hazards that make them the most likely to die on the job. An investigation by the Associated Press finds that Mexican immigrants are 80% more likely to die on the job than native-born Americans, and about twice as likely as other immigrant groups. The AP says that's not only because Mexicans tend to take more dangerous work, but because fines for employers whose workers die at work are...
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. So-called free trade is losing support in the United States, and the loss has accelerated in the last 5 years, according to a comprehensive survey by the University of Maryland's Program on International Policy Attitudes. 53% of those polled want the U.S. to rethink its free trade policies in the light of the massive job loss it's created. And this year, the PIPA survey finds support collapsing rapidly as you move higher up the income ladder, a complete reversal from the norm.
Stories of courage need to be shared. That's why we want to tell you about Senators Bob Graham and Bill Nelson. They have stood strong to protect our coastlines from exploration and drilling by powerful oil and gas companies. But the fight's not over. Congress is now pushing an energy bill that still threatens our coastlines with oil and gas activities, hands billions of dollars in tax breaks over to the oil, gas, coal, and nuclear companies, and could exempt polluters from clean air and safe drinking water laws. What's more, this so-called energy bill doesn't cut our dangerous dependence on foreign oil, fix what's wrong with our aging energy grid, adequately promote renewable wind and solar power, protect consumers, or increase the efficiency or security of our energy system. There is a better way. Call Senators Graham and Nelson at 202-225-3121. Thank them for their courage and ask them to reject this dangerous energy bill. Paid for by the Florida Sierra Club.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And dump the reds in a pile, boy. Dump the reds in a pile. You'd better wipe off that smile, boy. Better wipe off that smile. We'll spit through the streets of the cities we wreck, and we'll find you a leader that you can elect. Those treaties we signed were a pain in the neck. Cause we're the cops of the world, boys. We're the cops of the world.
Welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman radio program where despair is not an option. Get active, my friends. So much to do. We need to wake up America, and we're doing it. Here we are, doing it. 3 hours a day, 5 days a week, 52 weeks a year. This is the one-year anniversary of our show this month, so nice to be continuing on, as it were. 1-866-889-8894, and Frank Lou in Los Angeles is on the line. Hey, Frank, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hey, Tom. I emailed you on Friday about this, and you said, hey, call into the show. I'm a software engineer out here, and I'm just dumbfounded with... the way that the voting machines have been put together.
Yeah.
And
you and me both.
Well, and one of my really good friends here is an engineer with, you know, even more experience than I am, and we're like, well, why don't we write one? I mean, we've taken a look at the specs, and we could put something like that together, you know, lock ourselves in a basement for 3 months. We could have a prototype. Within a year, we'd have something that we could deliver. But we're wondering, are there grants out there? Is there some way to get some assistance or to try to put something like that together? Because it's really doable. I mean, I'm shocked that a corporation hasn't been able to do it correctly.
Well, this is a great example of the failure of the religion of privatization. In my opinion, the beating heart of our democracy, our vote, should not be in the hands of private corporations. In Germany, for example, they still, which is a country of 54 million people, I mean, it's not like a small little place, they still vote on paper, and those paper ballots are counted by bureaucrats who normally during the week have other jobs. I mean, they bring in people from the DMV and from everything else, and for 2 days they count ballots. And what's interesting is that the news organizations in Germany, they've been doing this since the mid-50s. The news organizations in Germany report the elections within 10, 20 minutes of the closing of the polls, and they've never been less than 0.1% off. They're absolutely accurate with their exit polls. So Germans know what the result was, and 2 days later they get the official result, and there is no possibility for fraud, and the government doesn't have to spend billions of dollars for high-tech machines that are in the hands of corporations. The government does the whole thing. People, you know, those folks responsible to we the people are doing it. And I don't know why we don't just go to that in the United States. It's just, you know, the reason why we've got these machines is because you've got a bunch of corporations that are well politically connected. You got big bucks to make, and they got their fingers into politicians' pockets. And this is nothing new. I mean, this goes back to the late 50s when they first installed the machines where you could, you know, pull the levers, which were equally vulnerable to fraud and fraudulently used, and well documented in many cases. And so that's my thinking on that. Or if we're going to use machines, let it be open source code. You know, develop it the way Linux was, and have government agencies open it, operate it, run it, own it, and be completely transparent to we the people. They have an obligation for that.
Well, I mean, I understand all that, but I mean, the fact is that there's a big push for these right now, and you know, we don't have some agenda to push. We just want it done right. You know, and like the whole thing with the vote down in Georgia last year really, really kind of freaks me out.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, you know, how many of those machines are out there? What, you know, what can possibly happen? What are the possibilities, especially since things are going to be really contentious and really tight this year?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a very difficult year. And you know, Rush Holt has tried to deal with this with his bill in the House of Representatives. There's a Senate bill that Hillary Clinton co-sponsored that goes along with it. Contact your elected officials is the number one thing to do. The telephone number for Congress is area code 202-224-3121. Call your elected officials and tell them, you know, support the voter-verified paper trail legislation and get on it. I mean, we have to do something to make sure that the vote process is fair in the United States. 29 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman, where despair is not an option. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Weapons of mass destruction isn't the only thing Bush can't seem to find these days. The nearly 2.5 million new jobs predicted by presidential advisors hasn't materialized. The latest Bureau of Labor Statistics report shows an unchanged unemployment rate of 5.6%. But the Economic Policy Institute notes one reason the unemployment numbers haven't risen is that last month, 392,000 people dropped out as labor force participants.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. The Federal Open Market Committee meets tomorrow to determine whether to raise U.S. interest rates, which Alan Greenspan is expected to keep at a low level following a dismal report on February's unemployment rate. But despite persistent unemployment, the chairman of the Federal Reserve says efforts to prevent companies from sending jobs overseas to hire cheaper labor could result in further stagnation of the U.S. economy. Greenspan faults the U.S. education system for producing too many low-skilled workers, lending to the current 2 million unemployed people who have been unable to find a job for 6 months or more.
The Bush administration created the position of Assistant Secretary of Commerce for Manufacturing last Labor Day, but it only got around to filling the job this month. Now the nominee has backed away from the honor after his experience with outsourcing comes to light. Anthony Raimondo withdrew his nomination after it was discovered that his Nebraska-based company, which makes prefab metal building materials, laid off dozens of line workers in 2002, then announced plans for construction of a factory in China 4 months later. Raimondo, who spent last week in China checking up on that new factory, calls the criticism a misunderstanding.
A lawsuit filed against contractors building the Yucca Mountain dump claims there's more than nuclear waste to worry about at the facility. Former tunnel supervisor Gene Grigo says that silica dust kicked up during the construction of the nation's largest nuclear dump is to blame for his chronic pulmonary disease. Grigo says he hopes his suit will win class action status to represent as many as 1,500 others who may have been exposed to the toxic dust. The suit is aimed at Bechtel and four other construction firms.
Members of unions affiliated with the AFL-CIO will pay 4 more cents per month in dues from now through mid-2005 to finance election spending this year. The dues hike will raise about $25 million for the AFL-CIO's war chest, which is expected to burn through $44 million on the 2004 elections. That's up $4 million from 2000. This does not include political spending done by each individual union in the Federation, which is expected this year to be more than double that of the AFL-CIO itself.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Mexican immigrants who come to the United States hoping to find a better life also find workplace hazards that make them the most likely to die on the job. An investigation by the Associated Press finds that Mexican immigrants are 80% more likely to die on the job than native-born Americans, and about twice as likely as other immigrant groups. The AP says that's not only because Mexicans tend to take more dangerous work, but because fines for employers whose workers die at work are so low.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the Democracy Zone. Tom Hartman here with you. 26 minutes before the hour, former FDA Chief Mark McClellan, who was confirmed as Director for the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services this morning, has finally agreed to testify in front of senators questioning his stance on the reimportation of drugs from Canada yesterday. Facing bitter backlash and the threat of a block on his nomination, he met with Senate Commerce Committee. However, he was so evasive. This is the guy, he's now in charge of the Medicare program, and he's the guy who, when he was in charge of the FDA, said, you shouldn't be able to bring drugs in from Canada because they're so dangerous. You know, there's all those dead Canadians hanging around the border just trying to get into the United States, just dropping like flies from taking Canadian pharmaceuticals, right? Anyhow, show me one. Show me one, please, Mr. McClellan. But anyhow, he finally appeared, and John McCain says, you come to this committee after having stiffed us, having stiffed the House of Representatives. My first question, you won't answer? And sure enough, that was the case. He refused to testify about why he thought that people shouldn't be able to import drugs from Canada. So now you've got, I mean, these guys, you know, they lick their finger, they stick it up in the air, and they go, which way is the wind blowing? Now Trent Lott is saying, well, maybe we should allow people to import drugs from Canada and Mexico. Good old Trent Lott. Yeah, you know where he stands, right? John Conron, Republican of Texas. Sam Buning, Republican of Kentucky. They're all starting to change their minds. Although, they still support the law that says the government can't negotiate with the drug companies the way the government can in Canada, which produces those low prices. Oh, no. Government can't. Well, the Veterans Administration can. The military can't. But the rest of the government can't. Nope, sorry. Ain't going to happen. Not possible. Adam in Santa Fe, New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Adam, 1-866-889-8894. Thanks for calling. What's up?
Yeah, Mr. Hartman, first of all, I'd just like to compliment you on just being on the air and actually caring about the country as much as you do. I myself have always had this thing for politics ever since I was in high school. And like I heard you say earlier, many of my teachers used to give me failing grades because of a lot of my political views.
Good on you.
which I had to fight on, you know, and eventually won.
Yeah.
My thing that I'm going through right now with what's going on with this country is I'm pretty much a young guy still. I'm only 26. And trying to come to some kind of terms with what's going on around me, because honestly, I mean, the way that I look at this country right now, I really don't want to have any kids because I really don't want to bring them into all this and, you know, have to apologize later on behalf of everybody who messed up.
That's a tragic perspective, Adam. That's
trying
tragic.
To come to terms with, for any other young people that might be listening to the program, and I'm sure there are, what actions can people take? Because the knowledge that I hear you speaking and the truth I hear you speaking is extremely beneficial. But I think also without guidance towards things that people can actually do hands-on and really feel like, you know, this could actually help them and their next-door neighbor or, you know, someone like me or, you know, et cetera, all the way down to the kids, you know, that are going to be coming up next. Do you have any suggestions with that?
Sure. Yeah. First of all, history tells us that change never happens from institutions. You know, that institutions like government, for example, or the president doesn't just wake up one day and say, "Oh, gee, I've been wrong all this time. I think I'll." You know, it doesn't happen that. Even the Supreme Court decisions, you know, they follow. I mean, in 1873, the Supreme Court said women have no right to privacy, and in 1973, they said, "Oh, gee, we just discovered they have a Fourth Amendment right to privacy." 1896, blacks don't have the rights of persons. In 1954, in Brown versus Berry, "Oh, gee, we just discovered that they did." And the Supreme Court didn't decide these things in a vacuum. They were reacting to the women's rights movement and the civil rights movement, and now. I believe eventually the 1886 Supreme Court case that gave corporations the rights of persons will be overturned because there's a human rights movement in the United States that says, you know, humans should have rights and not corporations. But anyhow, the point is that institutions don't create change. Change happens when a critical mass of people awaken to something. We had and everybody opposes this, but I mean we had in the United States, not in the United States, we had in the history of civilization from Gilgamesh in Mesopotamia, and it used to be called Uruk, and it's now called Iraq, which is where we, you know, the oldest known written story, the Epic of Gilgamesh, the first emperor, the first king, the first guy, he rose up and he cut off the head of the forest god Humbuba and cut down the cedars of Lebanon and built a mighty city, and that was the beginning of our civilization. From then, for 6,000 years, from then up until about 200 years ago, everybody agreed having slaves was a good thing. I mean, it was in the Bible. You know, even Paul said, you know, be nice to your slave. He didn't say don't have slaves, be nice to them. Everybody agreed that women should have no rights and they should be the property of men. And those two incredibly toxic stories just, you know, in 150 years or so, vanished. I mean, they're still around in remnants. The battle still isn't finished. But by and large, they've been seen for what they are, which is toxic stories. You know, broken, dysfunctional ways of viewing the world. And the idea, the other traditional idea that came to us from Gilgamesh, the 6,000-year-old history, is that humans should be ruled by those who are more powerful, and those who have either by warlord kings, by those who believe that God told them to, theocratic popes and mullahs, or by the rich, a system called feudalism and serfdom. And Jefferson and Adam and Adams and Mason and Jay and Franklin said no. No, people. We're going to try something different. We believe that that's a toxic story. People should be ruled by themselves, and the conservatives now are trying to bring it back around to the historic, you know, aristocracy, plutocracy. There, you know, trickle down economics or trickle on economics. The basic core idea of it is that there are those who are born to rule or to wealth, and there are those who are born to work or to be ruled, and it's wrong. It's wrong. It's toxic. And the more people who wake up to it, the more quickly it will be destroyed. So your first job is to wake up people to the toxicity of the stories, of the con stories, the conservative stories. And they're well ingrained. I mean, Rush Limbaugh has been out there ranting about them for 15 years. I remember, I'm 53 years old, I remember a time when people looked at folks like Ronald Reagan and said, you know, he's nuts, he's over the top. I remember a time when people really actually still remembered Franklin Roosevelt and still remembered the great experiment with liberal democracy in America and the fact that we could create a middle class and we could constrain corporate power in a way that allowed corporations to make money and created social good. And unfortunately, there's a lot of people of your age, my son is your age, a lot of people of your age who weren't exposed to that history, and because our schools have been, you know, unfortunately so screwed up over the last 20 or 30 years, never really learned it in school. And so it's so important for people like yourself who have woken up, you know, Adam, that you share that. So the tag, you're it. That's, you know, step number one. And step number two is we have to change our institutions. And the way that we change our institutions is by infiltrating them. This is what the, you know, I mean, look what happened to the Republican Party. It got infiltrated from within by a small group of right-wing extremists, and now they're in the White House. And look at the damage that they've done. But, I mean, you know, they should be an example to the rest of us. You take over existing institutions. The Democratic Party, in my mind, is ripe for takeover. And we should be activists within it. We should be participating in it. And that doesn't exclude participating with the Greens and the progressives and others. I think it can all be done at the same time. So, you know, waking up people and being politically active. And the pendulum does swing. Don't give up hope. The pendulum does swing. Things do go, you know, they go all the way to the left. They go all the way. They swing back. But things... I have tremendous hope for this country, and I think that there's a lot of potential here. Have I answered your question?
Yes, you have.
Okay, great. Adam, thanks for the call.
Thank you very much, sir.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Great to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. And let's see. Line one here. Jeff in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, Jeff, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
And I love this show.
Thank you.
Hey, I have a question to ask you, but I'm going to take it off the air if that's okay with you.
Sure.
And my question is, what do you see? How do you see the economics for the United States for the rest of the year? And I think you made mention of the fact that there was a possibility that if the interest rates,
thank you,
if the interest rates went 1 or 2% higher, that would create some major problems for people that had adjustable mortgages.
Right. Yeah, it'll burst the housing bubble. Yeah, you still there?
Yeah,
there, Jeff. Yeah, it'll burst the housing bubble is what's and there's a lot of people very terrified of that, writing in the Wall Street Journal and you know, very conservative financial publications, very, very worried about what's going to happen when interest rates start going up and the housing bubble bursts.
Could that happen this year?
It could, and I'm going to cut you off here, Jeff, because you're. Your line noise there is getting really bad, and you said you'd take your answer off the air, so I'm gonna drop you, but I appreciate the call. Yes, it could happen this year, and that's why Alan Greenspan is trying to hold this thing together with rubber bands and bubble gum. That's why he's going before Congress and saying we've got to cut Social Security benefits. The Social Security Trust Fund is showing a surplus and will be solvent until the year 2043 if nothing is done. It had a $1.5 trillion surplus this year alone. The Social Security Trust Fund. So why is Greenspan saying we've got to cut benefits and we got to dip into it? Because you know, he realizes that this borrow from our children and give the money to the wealthy right now policy that George Bush has pursued is bankrupting the nation, and they're trying desperately to hold things together until after the election, and after the election, if George Bush is elected after the election. And is unwilling to, like his father, I mean, you know, Ronald Reagan had one tax cut the second year of his presidency, one very large tax cut, and then 6 years in a row after that he raised taxes. And then George Bush Sr. said he wasn't going to raise taxes, and then, you know, two of the 4 years he raised taxes, and of course all the Republicans got all upset with him about it. But the bottom line was that had he not done that, had Reagan not raised taxes and had Bush not raised taxes, then the Reagan recession would have been a Reagan depression. And the disastrous deficit that you and I are paying interest on today would have been far worse. And so if George Jr. gets reelected, I see an absolute economic disaster for the United States unless he really changes his tune and changes his policies. On the other hand, if John Kerry gets elected, he's going to have to go in and do the same thing that Bill Clinton did in the first year of his presidency, and that's, you know, massively raise taxes. He's going to have to do it because we have to pay our way. You can't just live on a credit card forever. Eventually, you either have to stop spending or you have to start earning. And, you know, there's no consensus for stopping spending. The only place where you can really cut it is in the military. And here, you know, Bush has handed us this huge mess. That's not going to go away tomorrow morning. And so they're going to have to raise taxes. And of course, the answer is, I'd be glad to pay Clinton's taxes if I had Clinton's economy. I think that it's going to fall apart big time. It's going to be a huge problem for whoever the next president is. And I'd say the odds are about 50-50 right now. Just about 50-50 that they'll be able to hold it together until November. And it's looking increasingly, the cracks are starting to show increasingly. The fact that Japan bought all of our debt for the first 2 months of this year and propped up this government's ability to borrow and give that money to the wealthy in the form of tax breaks, Japan can't do that forever. China doesn't have the kind of resources, even with the huge trade surpluses, to do that forever. So I'm very concerned about it. Anyhow, 1-866-889-8894 is our number. Roy in New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Roy, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Good afternoon, my friend. You brought up McClellan's. Is it McClellan? Hearing?
Yeah. Mark McClellan.
I was so disappointed that Bernie wasn't on Friday, because I watched that hearing Thursday evening, and I was livid.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Actually, it was one of the times that I disagreed with Bernie. I would have liked to, when he was doing his warm-up and talking to the senators and talking about how he would not even appear in front of the committees in the House of Representatives, I wish Bernie had sat there and said, I want you guys to defeat his confirmation.
Yeah, unfortunately, Bernie's in the House of Representatives,
but he was testifying in front of that committee Thursday night.
Bernie was?
Yeah.
Oh, I missed that.
Him and the guy that shot the watermelon, Burton.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we'll ask him about it on Friday. He'll be on the program Friday, and we'll get into it.
And where did this $150 million? Again, there is so many things happening. That the fella that came out and said he was hammered into lying about the $150 million Medicare thing. And it got one day's play, if it even got. It didn't even.
Well,
get
it's actually on my list of things to get to today. In fact, it's at the very top. It's right. I get so many calls.
Much, Tom. Yeah. We're in future shock.
I know. It's incredible. The level of corruption of this administration is something that I have never seen. It. Not only have I never seen it in my life, but I frankly, Roy, never imagined it was even possible.
I can't keep up.
Yeah.
With the lies. It is just mind-blowing. Yeah. And fortunately, you know, the Spaniards, it took them 2 days to know they had a lying SOB, and they voted him out. Fortunately, they had election going on.
Yeah.
They didn't even have an investigation. What has it been, 2.5 years, and we still haven't even had an investigation for crying out loud.
I know. It's out of line. It's absolutely out of line.
I'm ranting and raving. You know, the McClellan, whatever. They are a dysfunctional family because neither the doctor nor Scotty can tell us, can answer a yes or no question.
Yeah, I know. It's a mess. Roy, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894. Got a couple calls on hold. We'll pick them up quickly after this break. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 10 minutes before the hour. Stay tuned. More truth and common sense in broadcasting.
That grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed of all agricultural products? Most people don't. But that is why it's so very important to drink wines that are made with certified organic grapes. And that is exactly what we are inviting you to do today. Taste our wines. We select them personally. They come from small properties in the south of France. They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. And they are earth-friendly. My name is Véronique. I founded the Organic Wine Company in 1980 for people just like you. People who love wine and want to do well by our earth.
Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE. We'll answer all your questions. I look forward to talking with you. Call 1-888-ECO-WINE, and that is ECOWINE.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is a small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do they know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. I have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
Setting up a radio station? Wondering what software to use? Listen to the words of Mike Chandler of WOBS in Florida talking about the TuneTracker system.
I love the software. I mean, it is rock solid. It has not burped one single time. This thing has not stopped. And I tell you, I've got some software that I run at two of my other radio stations that cost tons and tons more. One I paid, I think, $1,500 for it. And then one system, which was the Arrakis DigiLink system, I paid $15,000 for it. But this rivals my $15,000 system.
As Mike Chandler said, the TuneTracker system is rock solid. And the price? Only $349.95 for the pro version with traffic interface and only $149.95 for the original TuneTracker 2. Either way, you'll have a radio automation system that performs like systems costing thousands more. For more information, go to our website, www.tunetrackersystems.com. www.tunetrackersystems.com.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Good morning, Mr. PC. I trust you're doing fine. Your eyes are shining clearly, and your feet are keeping time. Lighting through the lobby, you flashed a pearly smile.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 5 minutes before the hour, Sheila in Denver's on the line. Hey, Sheila, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you?
Great. What's up?
I was just going to ask, did you catch 60 Minutes last night?
No, I didn't. I was
a real quick interview with a pharmacist in Canada. They wouldn't give the name of the pharmacy, but this pharmacist says they have regular customers in the United States, individual citizens and companies that they sell to. And their supplier, the big pharmaceutical company, told them that if we know that you're selling to United States citizens or companies, we will cut off supply.
Yeah, they're playing hardball. I mean, you know, it's no doubt about it. They're playing hardball. No, I didn't see that, Sheila, but thanks for the heads up. It's interesting to know. And you know, this is, again, we set the rules of the game of business. We the people. Through our elected representatives, and we can do better than that. By the way, before I take this last call, I want to thank Louise for producing the show today. I really appreciate it. Thanks to Brad Walrod in New York City for selecting and editing our music. Thanks to Rama Schneider for coming in and running the phones for us today and the automation equipment. Thanks to our sponsors, Small Dog Electronics, the Organic Wine Company, the Newsletter Factory for making the show possible, and the local sponsors and our radio stations that carry the program. Please patronize them. Thanks to the folks in our chat room for showing up. Always a pleasure and wonderful to have you there. Great to have you there. And now we have Dan in New Mexico's on the line. Hey, Dan, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how's it going?
Great. We got about a minute left here.
Okay, hey, two quick points. Condoleezza Rice came out and said that Iraq was a greater threat to our country than North Korea. And that's some credibility problems right there. And the second thing I like to point out is I know one leader in the world, you know how they're trying to scrutinize Kerry for talking about leaders and things like that. Well, I know that he can surely have the new Spanish government. I'm sure they would support him.
Yeah. I have a feeling that it was more than just one international leader who said to John Kerry, "I sure hope you get elected."
I have that same feeling too, but they're fighting it.
Yeah, and you know it's God bless him for standing up. I was so pleased when he made that off mic comment. And he refused to apologize for it. This guy's got he's got some strength that I didn't expect. I'm pleasantly pleased. Dan, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. Thank you all for listening today. It's been a great show. It's been great to have you with us. Marvelous 3 hours here. Tune in tomorrow, same time, same place. The Tom Hartman Radio Program. The real free speech zone. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Is corporate greed primarily a male problem? According to Catalyst, a nonprofit group devoted to the promotion of women in business, it's hard to hide from the bottom line. It studied the stock performance of 353 Fortune 500 companies between 1996 and 2000 and found those with the highest proportion of women executives produced a 34% greater return to shareholders than the most male-dominated firms. Even so, only one in five executives at the most gender-diverse companies were female. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Some corporate executive perks have legendary status, like former GE chairman Jack Welch's post-retirement Manhattan apartment and Knicks tickets, or former Tyco CEO Dennis Kozlowski's Mediterranean birthday party for his wife, all on the company tab. But most executive perks go unnoticed, thanks to weak rules at the Securities and Exchange Commission, which allow companies to classify such spending as general unspecified business expenses, exempt from...
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.